It's time for Twit This Week in Tech. John C. Dvorak, Jason Snell, and Denise Howell join me to discuss all sorts of stuff, including the $100,000 condom, the toilet right in the middle of your living room, and some serious tech news, too. It's all coming up next on Twit.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Audio bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by the new Winamp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android. Video bandwidth for Twit is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twit, This Week in Tech, episode 398, recorded March 24th, 2013. Not my toner! This Week in Tech is brought to you by GoToMeeting with HD Faces from Citrix, the powerfully simple way to meet and collaborate with colleagues and clients from anywhere. You can share the same screen and see each other face-to-face with HD video conferencing, even from an iPad. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and use the promo code TWIT. And by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get 2 free books. Go to audible.com/twit2. And don't forget to follow Audible on Twitter. User ID audible_com. And by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. For our special offer, go to Stamps.com now. Click on the microphone and enter TWIT. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPad, Samsung Galaxy phone, or other smartphone is worth at gazelle.com. It's time for Twit This Week in Tech, the show that covers the technology news of the week gone by. We bring in our top flight pundits to analyze, dissect, to chew, and expectorate the pith out of the stories. He's very good at taking the pith out of the stories. John C. Dvorak, ChannelDvorak.com. Thank you so much for being here.
I love coming up here.
I can tell.
And I'll tell you that it's beautiful right now this time of year. I recommend everyone take a trip up to Petaluma.
It's beautiful.
When you can, because the rain hit and all the grass turned green again.
You might, next month is Butter and Eggs Day. Might be good to wait for that parade, then the Antique Fair.
They have a Butter and Eggs parade of what?
Butter and Eggs.
What goes on?
Well, this was the butter and eggs capital of California for many years.
It was the chicken capital.
Well,
of that.
And what comes from a chicken?
Butter and eggs.
Right.
Well, not butter so much.
Well, there's chicken butter, but you wouldn't want to eat it.
Well, you could.
So the eggs come out of the chicken, and we were, in fact, the chicken capital, but mostly we're the egg capital, because they didn't kill the chickens to eat them. They kept them laying.
Yeah.
And the butter came from cows.
There's a lot of cows around.
Yeah, it's a big dairy area. So we celebrate our agricultural roots with a big parade. Now, Petaluma's only... It's 55,000 people, but really the west side, which is where we are, is only really about 25,000. So there's really – so what happens with the parade is everybody in town is in the parade. And what they do is they line up their chairs. They march in the parade. Well, you do, because you march in the parade. And then as soon as you've gone by, you go and you sit in your chair and you watch other people go by. So it's kind of a circular
thing. Well, it could be one of those things you get right back in the parade line.
You could.
At the end.
Exactly.
It just goes on forever.
It's an endless parade.
This is the biggest parade I've ever seen.
Yeah. The parade goes in a circle all around town like that. And you just put a chair in front
of it. Do you have a chicken under your arm, or what's the deal?
There are several contests. There's Cutest Little Chick in Town.
Cutest Little Chick in Town.
In which small children get dressed up as
chickens.
Chickens.
Okay.
There's the Rotary Pancake Breakfast is always good. I highly recommend that. There's nobody better at making bacon pancakes than the Rotary Club.
I actually question that assertion.
Well,
I'm not absolutely convinced that's true.
We can invite you up and we'll give you a shot.
I'd have to get up too early.
Also, here, he's just down the way, wrote a piece, Jason Snell. Good to have you.
It's great to be back.
Editorial director at IDG.
Yeah.
Did you know
Chamber
that?
Chamber of Commerce Jason? A sponsor?
Yeah, he was the last time he was on. He was the editorial director.
Yeah, but that's pretty cool. Macworld and PC World.
Yeah, it's actually a position out the door. Believe me, I'm not going to say anything, but it generally is.
What?
You know.
Yeah, they you know, your editor, you got all these, then they make you editorial director. Next thing you know, you're working for someone else.
You know, my
I've just seen it too many times.
My earliest memory of John Dvorak was at UC Berkeley, where he gave a little lecture to aspiring journalists. And the first thing he wrote up on the board was, editors are evil, and underlined evil like five times.
Typical writer.
I did that. That's
he
right.
He doesn't
that
like being edited.
That was
right.
The Markov, had a, right, I was given a. I was a
editors
guest lecturer.
Are evil.
Yes. Editors are evil.
I had to shake up these guys because this was a class of these youngsters that were naively thinking the world was in the 1950s.
Right.
And so Nobody
thinks that now.
No.
And Jason helped launch the new site, techhive.com, which has been really great. This is kind of your response to The Verge and other websites that are really kind of, I think, starting to take over from the print. Side,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
This is a good-looking site.
It's really nicely done.
Try to do something that's not tied to Mac or PC, but
right.
It's a little broader.
It's everything.
Yeah.
In fact, that's where Andy Iannocco's three-parter on how he left the iPhone for an Android phone.
That's right.
Went. And that's a perfect place for it because it's kind of, you know.
Three-parter.
Yeah, you got a lot of mileage. You know, it's macro. Funny because I left the iPhone years ago, but did I get all the attention that Andy did? I guess he's so known as an iPhone guy,
yeah.
Right?
Could have been a five-parter.
It started as a two-parter, believe me, and then I saw part two and I said, how about a three-parter?
So, but what's in there is what's better, what's worse, why I feel like the Android phones are now better.
He's not trying to tell people to switch. He's just explaining his thought process and what that says about what Android does well and what the iPhone maybe needs to do better.
A little later on, Denise Howell is going to join us, and so we're going to defer a conversation about a pretty sensitive subject in the tech community right now, the debate over dongles and forking and whether there's a place for that at a developers conference. But before we do that, let's talk about the mess that Apple made with two-factor authentication. Boy, was this a... So Apple did the right thing. A few days ago, they announced we're going to add second-factor authentication to your Apple ID so that when you enter your password on your iPad for the first time or iPhone or on your Mac to log into iCloud, to log into iTunes, we're going to ask for a code generated from your phone.
Right.
Actually, be via text message, I guess, to your phone.
It could be text message, or they also use the Find My iPhone feature. So if you're logged into an Apple ID, it can go to an iPad or an iPod Touch or any device.
So
like
will
that
it? How does that? How does that work? Does it pop up? Something?
Yeah, it's the same technology they use to push those. You know,
hey,
I'm lost.
Give me back my phone.
Make a loud noise because you can't find it in the couch cushions.
Oh, that's
kind
interesting.
Of technology. It's the same sort of.
So
thing.
It will pop up an alert saying, "Here's your."
Right.
Number. Now, once you enter that, you validate the machine, and you don't have to do that again, right?
Right. It's for some period of time, it's valid. So you have to have the password and that in
for
order to
for some
be able
period
to do
of time.
Yeah,
unspecified.
I don't know the details.
This is what always bugs me.
I haven't used it for that. Well, for Google, it's 30 days, I think.
Yeah, because every 30 days, here comes another one of these annoyances.
Yeah, and I got.
Well, look, there's a trade-off between convenience and security. And
what kind of security do you need on one of these phones?
Well, ask Matt Honan. Had there been two-factor authentication on either his Gmail or his Apple ID, he wouldn't have been hacked, lost all his data.
Yeah, that's the point. Is just that you have to have your password, and then you have to have one of these objects in your in your pocket, really, and then you have to. Put them both in, and then you get access to your account. And it's not for every login. It's not like every
time you
buy an app.
You don't have to do this either. You don't have to. It's opt-in.
No, although the day that this came out, The Verge also posted an article about how they discovered a horrible hole in Apple's security system and said, well, I guess you better turn two-factor on because otherwise you can get hacked. I think it's all they needed to know was your email address and your date of birth, and they could reset your password. And
take control of your account.
Yeah, so two-factor is a pain, but it's probably a good idea.
Apple turned off the I Forgot website as soon as The Verge published this article and fixed it. Although some people probably, we don't know, but I would imagine some people were bit by this.
We have to do a little research. It's not like the internet rushed in there because you have to know somebody's email address
and
date of birth.
Yeah.
Mine's
on Wikipedia.
Yeah. Well, see, that's a problem.
Yeah.
And you got to turn on two-factor.
I did.
The big problem with the two-factor tying it to Apple IDs, if you can put it to your SMS, just to a text message to your phone, and that works. But I have two different Apple IDs on my iOS
too.
Devices. I've got the one I buy all my apps on,
yes.
And then I've got the one I use like iCloud backup and all that. And to send those messages, you need to use it's the address you're using for two-factor is that ID. And so I actually realized that if I turned on two-factor, I was going to be reduced to just text messages because my devices are logged into a different iCloud ID.
So you can only have one ID.
My phone. Right. So, well, you can have more than one ID, but the messages for that ID will only use that method. So basically now I turned it on, but it's only going to my wife's iPhone and my iPhone and not our other devices because that's on another Apple ID. And Apple still doesn't let you merge different Apple IDs. So everybody's got like three or four Apple IDs.
So I borrowed a guy's iPad and I wanted to prank him by downloading some crazy apps from the App Store. But I didn't have any of these IDs. But since I had the iPad, I went to the store, the App Store, and it says, "Did you forget your password?" And I said, "Yes." So it sent me the password to the mail account on the iPad, which I just automatically opened up, pulled the password down, got to download the stuff, cost them maybe $5 or $6. But at the same time, it was just like, this is kind of dumb.
So now you know why I stopped allowing John to handle any of my devices. Yeah. By the way, I was probably that guy. I'm just thinking.
No. I never have touched your iPad.
Thank you. You've always screwed up my phone.
All I do this is joke. Everyone should think about this great joke. You go into the language section and turn the phone into Russian or Cyrillic or something.
It's some non-Roman alphabet.
Chinese,
you can't
is great.
Guess what it is.
You can never get what?
I can't change it back because I don't know.
Right, so you got the guy in Chinese. A great, great gag. I recommend it.
The good thing about the second factor is it turns off the security questions, which are a huge loophole. In fact, I don't even remember setting security questions. I cannot remember my favorite children's book or the name of this. Well, I know what the name of the street where I grew up is, but it doesn't work. So I cannot reset my Apple ID. And then here's the worst part of this. Send reset security info to this email address. Except this isn't the email address they have on file. It says .com instead of .cc. Huh. There's some script that munged it.
Oh,
because I never gave them. I don't know. They have the correct address. In fact, when I changed my birth date to make this less hackable, they sent me an email to the correct CC address. So there's some bug.
Yeah,
continuing bug.
You mentioned Matt Honan, and he wrote a great piece in Wired about how the password needs to die. I mean, passwords are good for low security, kind of semi-trustworthy environments, and the internet isn't one of those anymore.
Retina scan.
What we get, well, I mean, that's the thing, is the biometric stuff can be fake.
It's not great either.
No, so it's. I mean, this two-factor stuff, as weird as it is and
it's
kind
the
of
best
as a
way
pain,
to do it.
It's like getting those government installations where they've got the little cards that have the random number on them that change.
They'll do three. They'll often do a password, a number, and then do a retinal scan.
Yeah, and the good thing about that is if your device that's got the two-factor on it disappears, you can reset it. Right.
Why don't you just keep things encrypted?
Well, we do.
I mean, the guy who lost his phone.
I use LastPass.
And then,
The Honan thing is interesting, and that's why he says passwords need to die. They didn't have his password. At no point did they get his password. They used social engineering to trick Amazon and then Apple into resetting the password. They didn't need the password. So he might have had a LastPass super secure 28-digit password. Didn't matter because they tricked Apple.
Right.
That's one of the reasons Apple needed to do this, is these this eliminates secret questions. That's a big hole. Anytime I try to log in and it says, "Did you forget your password? We can help." That's a flaw.
Yeah.
And Apple says, by the way, after you turn this on, we aren't going to help you anymore.
Yeah, they give you a special secret code that is the third factor, essentially, and you need two of the three factors. And what they tell you to do with that, Dropbox is the same way. Google is the same way. They tell you to print it out.
Save it. Don't put it on a computer.
Don't save it. Yeah, just print it out and put that piece of paper somewhere secure in your house or something so that you can get it if you need it, if you lose one of the other two factors.
Right.
And then you can unlock it and reset it with a different code.
Yeah, they say specifically, do not put this on a computer.
Yeah, right, because then if they get offline into your Dropbox or whatever, they can see that and then they can reset your password. It's a pain.
You can say passwords should die, but I don't know if there's an obvious...
No, that's the trick, because everybody sort of agrees passwords are weak, but...
What do you do?
There's no great alternative right now.
So I use two-factor on Google, Facebook also allows this, now Apple.
Dropbox, I'm using it on Dropbox now.
Dropbox,
they just turned that on.
Yeah. I don't put anything private on Dropbox because they can read everything. So
they can. I mean, you can also put an encrypted disk image on Dropbox if you want.
Right.
Okay.
Changing your passwords over there?
No, I don't even care.
What do you do? Do you have any? Do you care about this stuff?
No, not really. And somebody gets in, what are they going to take?
Right.
I mean, I'm not trying to make the argument that, I don't commit any crime, so I don't care about my privacy, because that's bull crap. But I don't have, you know, what are they going to steal all my old columns? I mean, what are they going to get? Or my photos.
Right.
Well, terabytes of photos. I mean, it's like, God, why does he keep all these photos?
Do you have your tax returns online?
No.
What happened to Matt Honan wasn't that they stole his data. It's that he had all of his photos on his Apple devices, and one of the features that Apple offers is a remote wipe. So what they did is they remote wiped all of his devices, and he lost all his photos.
See, I have my photos triple redundant.
Well, that's
backed up.
That's what you should do.
And on little discs, little terabyte discs. You can buy these little guys from Western Digital.
Aren't they great?
Yeah. You can get a 4 terabyte drive for $150.
You know, my backup drive died today, and I had a bunch of people say, oh, that's so terrible. You must be so mad. And it's like, well, actually, no, because I've got an online backup service, and it was the backup, so I have the original data. So I've still got 2 copies of everything.
Yeah, I've got an offline
hard drive of the most important stuff that's in a different location.
I keep one in my trunk. You
know, yeah.
Really? Of your car?
Yeah.
So if you're looking for your
photos. In case the house burns to the ground.
Aren't you worried that when you put people in the trunk that they'll steal your...
Usually they're not cold.
Oh, okay.
I don't put anyone wiggling. Oh. It's too hard to get them in.
Let's take a break.
Did Joe Pesci in Goodfellas have a hard drive?
Remember the pound? That's what I'm thinking, the pounding. Hey, he's awake.
My favorite one is that I need air. And then one of the movies, and the guy shoots a hole in the trunk.
Shoots a bunch now of you can breathe.
Another good... Yeah.
I love gangster movies, don't you?
When Scorsese does them.
Yeah, they're the best. Hey, we got a winger. So we were doing a contest for GoToMeeting, GOTOMeeting.com. I should probably tell you what GoToMeeting is before I tell you who the winner is. It's a way for you to meet and collaborate online. Your entire team can get together, even if they're not physically next to each other, because GoToMeeting not only allows screen sharing, but it actually gives you HD video. They call it HD faces. So you're seeing the person's screen. You're seeing the people you're meeting with. It works on not only a Mac or a PC, but it works on an iPad, an iPhone, Android devices. In fact, you can present from iPads, which is really awesome. It means you can have a meeting, and you can be sitting out in the backyard with your iPad in your lap and enjoying yourself. We use GoToMeeting with HD Faces for almost all of our online meetings. It's just a lot easier to get together. And, you know, as you know, a lot of our team is distributed all over the country, all over the world. With GoToMeeting, you share the same screen, so you stay on the same page. The built-in HD conferencing makes it be like you're in the same room. It's easy to launch or join a meeting from anywhere. Why are you watching Twit? We're here.
I know.
You don't need
to watch that.
I've
got to put this on.
You like to watch the show while you're on the show?
No, I was going into the chat room because they had some commentary that needed addressing. You may continue, sorry.
It's like Twitception, Rob says. I dreamt I was on Twit, and then I was. So we have a winner. What we did is we asked people, lots of people tweeted too, to answer the question, if you could host a meeting from anywhere this winter using GoToMeeting, where would it be and why? We asked you to add the hashtags TwitiPad and GoToMeeting. I have the iPad here. And congratulations to, drum roll, Dave Cocandy, who said, I would meet with HR professionals from around the country using my new iPad and GoToMeeting to encourage them to hire my students. I guess he's from Ashland, Oregon. He teaches HR. So there it is. There's your iPad, and we're going to contact you, Dave. Congratulations. If you want us to autograph it, in fact, we should contact him quick so we can get Dvorak and Jason to autograph it as well if he would like that. Thank you, Dave. Congratulations. We'll do more of these. More giveaways to come. And make sure you try GoToMeeting to work face-to-face. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and use the promo code TWIT. Then download the free iPad or iPhone software and get to that meeting. It is awesome. Moving along. Story number 2.
Wow.
I know. We're moving.
We're moving along.
Apple is going to be flatter.
What do you mean flatter?
Flatter. The new iOS might be look a little bit like Metro. Apparently, according to...
Why would anyone in their right mind make this decision?
Because they went so far in the other direction with this, you know, skeuomorphism.
Skeuomorphism.
In fact, maybe a harbinger of this, the new podcast app, which was just pushed onto the iPad a couple of days ago, they took the reel-to-reel tape recorder
out.
Yes,
they took the object that wouldn't be recognizable to anyone under the age of 50 out of the app.
It was odd that they even included that. Jessica Lesson, I've got to get... Do you know Jessica? She's been writing for the Journal for a while, covers the Apple Beat, and does a great job. She says that Johnny Ive has decided. They said Scott Forstall was the man behind skeuomorphism, the torn paper, the stitched leather.
But yeah, I mean, Jobs ultimately liked it was Steve that Jobs,
too.
Yeah.
He liked it too. Yeah,
absolutely.
Because I remember that the leather, was it on the note? It was on something, was duplicated the leather in the Apple van.
I thought it was like his, there was like leather on his jet.
Oh, it was the jet. So I don't know. I don't know what the point is, but apparently Johnny Ive, who was reputedly always against all of this and is now in charge of Apple GUI design globally, says we're going to go flatter.
Well, I mean, just look at all the stuff that Ive has designed. It's all been pretty simple, and it's clean. Lately, especially, it's monochromatic and very simple. And so it's not surprising if he has that clout and he's in charge of it now that they would move in that direction.
I think the DOS prompt.
That is minimalist.
Ive is pushing, according to Jessica, writing in the Wall Street Journal, for a more flat design that is starker and simpler. She says she gets this from developers who've spoken to Apple employees. Overall, they expect any changes to be pretty conservative, like perhaps dropping the reel-to-reel out of the podcast app. Actually, that podcast app, which was horrible, is now usable.
I mean, Ive gets people talk about Ive's design sense a lot, but he's not just looking to design pretty stuff. I mean, he is a minimalist for functionality's sake. I think he more often than not is erring on the side of, is it usable? And that's really the most important thing here, is if he makes it bland but it's not any more usable, then it's not a move, it's not a step forward. So, you know, hopefully that's what he's looking for, and I think he's got a good background.
Well, and it would be my suggestion that the reason we did skeuomorphism originally way back when is because computers were new.
Where did this term skeuomorphism come from?
Know.
I've never heard this word
before.
It's
a crazy. I've only heard it in the context of Apple making things look like other things, but that's the idea.
When did you
first use it all the time. It's me. I invented it.
Yeah, it's the idea that if you've got a clock interface on a computer, you have to grab a hand and drag it around, even though that might be like wildly inefficient. You have to do it because people are used to clocks that work like that, and eventually the idea is that people aren't used to that anymore. They understand that it's a digital clock and that there's some better way to interact with it.
Skeuomorph, the classic skeuomorph, is the fake wood on the woody, the simulated wood grain on a station wagon, which has actually no
actual wood. My wife
does
great marble.
That's
faux marble.
That's unfair because, of course, as we all know, the original cars that were made were carved out of large logs. And
that's the Flintstones. Right? You're thinking about the Flintstones.
That's why skeuomorphism is kind of ridiculous. It's like, why do cars have wood in them? They never had wood in them.
Because you're a country squire. I'm sure. But anyway. Exactly. And I think in the early days of computing, maybe the idea, well, this is a notepad, this is a folder, maybe help people understand.
You know,
I would think it was going to be spelled
skew, S-K-E-W.
It's skeuomorph.
Like skew, like twisted.
It's compounded from the Greek skeuos, meaning container or
Who
tool.
Who came up with this word? Is there an explanation of where this
shape.
Word was derived?
Yes. I'll look here on Wikipedia, the source of all that is good and
knowledge.
True.
Well, the big argument here is that like Apple changed its address book design, which used to be a sort of a three-paned approach, but they wanted it to look like a physical book, so they took one of the panes away, which made it less functional but more like a book. And the people who are against skeuomorphic design say that you shouldn't turn off functionality just in order to make people say, oh, cool, it looks like a book. On the other hand, a lot of people think it's really cool that when you're in iBooks and you flip the page, you actually see
the page
curl.
For some reason, I don't mind a page flip, especially if you can turn it off.
It's a bit corny.
But it's a little cornball. There's skeuomorphism.
Totally
corny. See the wood? See the brushed aluminum
Rich
knobs?
Corinthian leather.
This is probably from Dribble. D-R-I-B-B-B-L-E has a lot of examples of skeuomorphism. Look at that. A coffee cup sliding on a checkered tablecloth. This is a blog of skeuomorphic design.
So this is skew.it, S-K-E-U.it.
I love it. There's such bad examples. Spiral. And a lot of times this is ugly. If you overdo it, it's ugly. I don't think apples are particularly ugly, but they just don't make sense.
They're kind of cute.
A lot of this gets mixed up. I think you're exactly
right. So does Microsoft Bob.
There are two things that are happening here. One of them is it's cute and it's fun and it's whimsical. And then the other thing is it's less functional or it's confusing and it gets in my way. And sometimes people wrap all that stuff up in skeuomorphism. And I do think it's two separate things. You know, making something look like leather isn't a problem necessarily if it doesn't get in your way. It's only when, you're taking features out in order to make it look like it's stitched.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, that's the problem.
DOS prompt.
Hey, look who's here. Denise Howell is joining us from This Week in Law. a host of our show. It's great to talk to you, Denise. Thank you for being here.
Oh, it's so good to see you guys.
How do you feel about skeuomorphism?
I like things like the page turn. It just sort of keeps things consistent for me. I know what I'm doing, whatever device I'm on or
But you
got
to admit that in like the podcast app, having a reel-to-reel, which as you point out, Jason, nobody would recognize except somebody of our age.
And it obscured the podcast art, too.
You didn't see the art. And somebody spent a lot of time programming it so that the tape on the reel would get bigger. Not only the reel but the tape would get bigger as you listen to the podcast. Completely useless.
It's ludicrous.
Although how maddening would it be to watch that thing turn and see that it never got any better? That would be crazy.
Well, if you're going to do a tape reel-to-reel, you got to make it real. Anyway, Denise, there's a couple of very sexist stories going on. We want to get you on here. We didn't want it just to be a couple of old white guys.
Club, yeah.
And then the young white guy talking.
Yes. I'm sorry I couldn't be more ethnically diverse for you.
If you were black, we'd be a lot happier, but I guess we'll just have to accept this. First of all,
I might be a little tan.
Yeah, you're tan. That's good. Congratulations on making the hottest women in tech list. I almost don't even want to mention this.
You shouldn't. Now, we go right to a sexist item.
Well, no, that's why we brought Denise on.
Yeah, well.
Because she's on that list.
You congratulate her for a sexist kind of a meme.
It's from a site I've never heard of, complex.com, and some weenie I've never heard of who wrote it.
Yeah.
The 40 hottest women in tech.
It's a slideshow. Can you write a slideshow?
Yeah, I guess writing is not. But whoever this guy is clearly a fan of Twit.
For every one of the,
he's clearly a fan of Twit because many of the people on this list are from either Tech TV or Twit, right? Including
not her.
She's always makes the list. She's some Russian who does.
That's the grammar girl.
Grammar thing.
And
yeah.
She's actually, but the grammar part of her, that she does is interesting.
Gina Trapani was really upset about being on this. I know Jenny Jardin said, "That picture is copyrighted. Take it down." This is just stupid. Stupid, stupid, stupid. And I shouldn't even give them any
publicity.
Yeah,
and you shouldn't, but it's too late now.
It's worth bringing up because I got to say, I learned about this from Gina and Shenny and their Twitter feeds. They were both very upset and also just sort of going, huh? You know, what is this exactly? Yeah. And how would I land on such a thing? And I've got to say, you know, you started out by saying congratulations. And
tongue in cheek, I might add.
Yeah, I know. But, condolences too. It's weird, though. I mean, if folks out there haven't already read Sheryl Sandberg's book, I just started it.
Lean in.
Everyone should read that because I think it just kind of nails the problem and really identifies, okay, we've come a huge long way as our society. Having people have different views toward the sexes, but some things have not changed. And the impact that had on me was when I first learned of the list. You know, I never thought that I would be on it. I'm, 48 years old and look nothing like that woman that you just showed, the Russian gal. So I'm flipping through and I was, just stunned. And then all of a sudden I was kind of like, whoa, cool, I should send this guy a bottle of wine.
Well, that's the funny thing. If somebody put me on such a list, I'm not sure I'd be.
This is what you've been angling
offended.
For.
Did you see that in response, somebody wrote a list that was the 40 rad tech dudes on the internet that was like the satire of that?
Good. The thing is, these lists are always stupid. John and I talk about this all the time.
We talk about it because they're all stupid because they're all done the same way. And I'll remind everybody how these work because we used to do them at InfoWorld and PC Magazine. You sit around.
It's link bait.
You sit around at lunch, and you say, "We got to do our top 20 best, most well-known influencers or anything." And so you sit around lunch, and you decide that it's time to. Was that Kevin Rose? They're all Kevin Rose.
This is really funny. This is the 41 geeky guys. And it's just hysterical.
Oh, my God.
It's number one is Larry Ellison.
Scoble came up at 11.
Not really sure what his job is.
No description required. Was.
Has no job.
Sexiest Hap of Apple's founding team, Matt Mullenweg. These are all
that
old.
That doesn't even look like Matt.
Yeah. Actual hot guy.
Now, see, this is how these stories start, is with a Google image search to find out what images we can get.
You
find
it's Linkbait.
Yeah.
Anyway, but the topic we're supposed to be discussing, besides this bull crap,
can I add one more point on this bull crap real quick before we leave it?
Yes.
You mentioned the copyright issue, Leo. Just hysterical aside is the picture that they pulled out of me is 10 years old, roughly, and was taken by a photographer for the ABA magazine.
Wow.
So the ABA journal has the rights to this.
Don't mess with lawyers when it comes to this
really
kind of stuff.
I really want to bring down the whole cadre of lawyers.
The American Bar Association is pissed, Luke Winky. And yeah, Jenny Jardin said that's a copyright photo by mostly Lisa Bettany, and take it down immediately.
Yeah.
Yeah, people don't realize that the photographer owns the copyright to almost everything they take pictures
unless
of.
Unless they explicitly release it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. They can do it with Creative Commons.
But the reason that magazines do these, Forbes every year does the top 50 billionaires. The reason they do these is...
They actually research that pretty thoroughly.
Yeah, because nobody's saying how much they're worth.
They always miss all these Chinese guys. There's a whole bunch of billionaires in China that they don't have on that list.
But you got to admit, these articles grab attention. They're link bait. I mean, I always read the Forbes article. I want to know who the richest guy in the world is. Don't you?
You aspire.
I keep hoping I'll show up somewhere on that list.
I don't give a crap. I don't look at that list at all. Yeah. I really don't.
Well, because you know it's really fundamentally made up.
That's a list that's at least based on facts,
that one's
right?
Real,
this
yeah.
is just
the rest
made
is
up.
Yeah. Who's the most influential? This and that. Who cares?
And having seen that, I mean, this is how they do them. They literally do go to Google image search, find people,
right?
This
lawsuit thing and the takedown. This is bullcrap too, because there's no way this guy's got it. He's not actionable. The guy's not. Is judgment proof. Most people are, especially on the internet, especially on these sites, and you can threaten them and do all these things. He's not going. You're not going to.
Judgment proof.
We
have
had
no judgment.
We had people that were stealing my column full cloth from PC Magazine. I went right to the lawyers. I said, "What is this? This guy's is taking the stuff." He says, "You know, it's not worth the trouble."
Yep.
Not
there you are,
the
ladies
trouble.
And gentlemen. Steal what you want.
21st century.
So let's get to the dongle joke.
Oi.
This is another one I didn't really want to cover, but I feel like we probably should. It's certainly spun out of control now. It happened at PyCon, the Python Developers Convention. Adria Richards, who turns out I know. I did not know I knew her until somebody in the chat room said, oh, yeah, she interviewed you last year. And very nice person. Was sitting in the 10th row of the Python Programming Conference. She works as a developer evangelist for a company, and apparently there were a couple of guys sitting behind her mouthing off about dongles and forking. What we don't know is how foul or prurient those jokes
were. Yeah, it would be nice
that
we knew what the jokes were.
But she took a picture of them and tweeted, not cool, jokes about forking repos in a sexual way and big dongles right behind me, PyCon. And here's the bad news. The guy on the right got fired by his company, and Adria got fired by her company. So the guy was a developer for Playhaven. The CEO posted on the website, as a company that is dedicated to gender equality and values honorable behavior, we conducted a thorough investigation and we've let the employee go. And then Adria got fired by her company. They don't have anything to say about why. SendGrid. SendGrid has meanwhile been DDoSed by Anonymous. Just a mess. And
it seems
really
like they did have something to say about why. At first, there was a post people were pointing to on Facebook.
Oh, here it is. All right, I got it. Yeah. A SendGrid developer evangelist's responsibility, Adria, is to build and strengthen our developer community across the globe. In light of the events of the last 48 hours, it's become obvious that her actions have strongly divided the same community she was supposed to unite. As a result, she can no longer be effective in her role at SendGrid. Our commitment to our 130 employees, their family, their community members, our more than 130,000 valued customers is our primary concern. So what a mess.
Yeah, that about sums it up.
What a mess.
Nobody except maybe PyCon ends up looking good in this at all, and they are still going to be remembered as the group that where this thing happened, but at least they seem to have acted with some care, and every other party in here, yeah.
I'm guessing this will be forgotten in 2 months.
It's 2 weeks, probably, but
okay,
I feel bad for Adria. She's being doxxed right now on the internet. Hackers are publishing her private information. She's being trolled, death threats.
My
on
concern
4chan.
Is that the thing that won't be forgotten here is that there's going to be another conference where there's a woman and a group of 50 men, and somebody's going to say something that's really offensive,
right?
And she's going to be like, "Well, I could say something, but." Last time that
happened,
she got fired.
Right.
So I'm just going to shut up. That's what concerns me.
That's actually a really good point.
I hope that the takeaway for this, I hope it's not forgotten in a couple of weeks, and that the takeaway for this is that people need to realize that in the world we live in today, everything you do is a matter of public record. And so you need to think about it, you know, whether you're cracking the joke in an inappropriate place, whether you're overreacting perhaps to overhearing a joke that was not directed at you. All of that kind of conduct is subject to scrutiny by the world at large based on the networked society that we're living in.
And it is also reasonable that you want to make computer sciences, engineering, and programming a friendly place for women. So I understand Adria's point, which is, you know, we got to be a little more careful about how we act at these events. And I doubt she thought that the repercussions that happened would happen. Also, by the way, it was against the rules of the conference, I guess, although I think those rules were changed after the fact, so I'm not sure.
Well, what kind of conference rules are there that you're sitting in the audience?
No harassment.
You're sitting in the audience. You're not harassing her. You're just talking amongst your friends thinking you're funny. And you exchange a couple of jokes. She overhears and doesn't like it, doesn't turn around and punch him. She, you know, gets a little annoyed and then takes a picture to humiliate them and puts it on the internet. I don't know. I mean, who's at fault here? I mean, she could have done other things.
Well, we don't know what she did. She might have complained.
Well, we do know one thing she did. She took a picture and posted on the internet calling these guys out as douchebags.
Yeah, I really liked Jolie O'Dell's post on this where she presented the alternate reality of what could have happened if folks had just made some different decisions. Right. And, you know, I'm certainly not singling out Adria as somebody who misbehaved, because I don't think she did. But, you know, you've got to think before you decide to involve the entire online community in your career path.
Twitter's not a really great way to communicate and keep it a secret, right? I mean, I feel like what she was really trying to do there was communicate to the PyCon people that she was feeling uncomfortable.
But she did hashtag
PyCon. And they came and they dealt with it. They took the guys outside to ask them to cut it out.
Lay off.
But the fact was, it's not a direct message to PyCon. It's a public tweet,
right.
And it got around and it got those guys fired.
And what we don't know is what the jokes were, how offensive they were. We don't know if she looked at them and said, stop it, and they didn't. I don't know if we know more about, you know, enough about the story to know really what happened.
And we don't know if she's been in that situation before and did say something and it was a bad situation, so she didn't want to do it again. I mean, there's lots, like I said, I think there's a lot of questions about a lot of the behavior in this situation. Nobody comes out looking good, I think. But, you know, my concern is just in the future, other women in technology are going to be like feeling it's even more an oppressive environment, which is what we're trying to stop from happening.
That's a really good point. I mean, horrendous things do happen at tech conferences. I've heard horrible.
What?
Terrible stories.
Like what?
Well, I'm not sure I want to get into it, but of women being physically harassed in an elevator, for instance.
Yeah, exactly. Followed off the floor.
But that's not a fundamental aspect of tech conferences.
No, absolutely not. But at the same time, we do want to kind of try to encourage.
It's enhanced when there are 90 men
and one
and
woman.
Five women.
Exactly,
it's not necessarily a friendly place to be.
Yeah, I've been to tons of tech conferences and I've never had a single kind of negative incident like that, except that just being cognizant of the numbers, you know, and the numbers are gradually changing. But again, that lean in book, you know, it may not be the first thing that a guy thinks about reading, but they should. It is a really, really good read. And it sort of gives the experience of what people are doing today that they may not even be thinking about that they should.
We should say also that PyCon, I think, had 30% women attendees.
Really?
So it was, I mean, that's a much more women populated conference than a lot of developer conferences.
Yeah. Okay. Let's move on. We've going to jail for 41 months. And I think what he did here was mouthed off. That was what he did. He's the guy who figured out that if you query an Apple or an AT&T database with a UUID, I think it was a UUID. It will give you, no, I'm sorry,
it's
the ICC IDD, it will give you your email address back.
Right. And this was the one where there were like some in the White House and.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So 2010, he wrote a script that would query this database over and over and over again and collected hundreds of thousands of email addresses of iPad owners. Remember, he released that information.
That's pretty creative.
Yeah. It is. I'm not sure he needed to do it 100,000 times.
Yeah, and release it publicly.
Well, does anyone know how he had the numbers? Did he just come up with them? Or
random. It's a script, so it just went through numbers.
Yeah, just cranks away.
And if nothing came back, he tried the next one, and then the next
he doesn't try anything. The computer
it's a script.
He wakes up in the morning, he's got 100,000.
It randomly queried AT&T's website with ICC IDs. Just random.
Great idea.
He did make some mistakes.
For all you spammers who are looking for a mailing list.
He said he wanted to get the... first, he says he tells the assembled crowd the day before his sentencing at a press conference on the courthouse steps, I'm going to jail for doing arithmetic. Then he says he wants the maximum sentence so that people will rise up.
What an idiot.
Oh, man.
Now, that's idiotic.
That's just a little ego. I hope they give me the maximum so people will rise up and storm the decks. He also did a Reddit IAMA right before, on the night before sentencing. And he said a few things that were then used the next day by federal prosecutors during the sentencing hearing.
Expected.
Yeah.
Yeah, people might have stormed the decks for Aaron Swartz. I don't think right. They're going to storm the decks
Sorry,
for
Weave.
Me. Yeah.
But it does raise the issue that, you know, you could deface the front of somebody's building and get a few months, but to face the front of their website, you're going to jail for a while.
It's ludicrous.
And yeah. They really do treat computer crimes much more.
Well, that's because
is
they
that
don't
apropos?
Understand
is it right?
These 80s era computer crime laws that are kind of out of whack. If you look at the sentencing, if you look at how long they'll go to jail for some of this stuff versus some other real world kind of
yeah, like acts. A mugging or stabbing someone.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, not to defend this guy because he probably shouldn't have published all of those.
How
numbers.
About just a fat fine?
How, what,
$50,000.
Community
Denise
service.
Is an attorney.
And community service.
What is your sense, Denise, of all of this? These are federal sentencing guidelines, right?
Right. And a federal law, the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, that allows for some very severe penalties if you're found guilty of exceeding authorized access or accessing a computer without authorization.
That's what Aaron Swartz was charged with.
Right. And for someone like Weave, you know, we may all just kind of say, okay, you know.
He deserved it.
I got what he deserved.
Right.
But we should not lose sight of the fact that the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act needs to be amended and right. reformed. Absolutely.
And really, you should have to go to jail because you're a wise ass.
Any law from 1986.
Exactly. We'd all be in jail.
Legislating high tech. I mean, 1986.
Yeah.
It's how many generations of technology have we seen since then? It needs an update.
There's also, in my estimation, a fear of computer technology, which also fuels this, that prosecutors, police officials are so afraid of what what hackers can do that they over-prosecute them, even when what they're doing is really no different than vandalizing the front of a building.
Right.
It's treated as much more serious because of it's scary.
Yeah.
It's new. It's scary. It's different.
We saw with the SOPA and PIPA issues that our legislators are not at all technically proficient, and
they're still scared.
So they're scared, and right. they don't know that world, and you know, and a lot of their constituents don't understand that world.
It's scary.
Boo. Hackers.
Hackers. Those hackers.
Although
are
I got
to
admit, hackers seem to be winning.
Yeah, they just be quiet.
Steve Gibson talked on the Security Now this week about a very interesting. Study. They called it an Internet Census 2012. But what it really was a smartly anonymous guy, because he would go to jail for this for sure, who realized that there were a lot of computers out there with open FTP ports. Even worse, these open FTP ports were often... not secured by real passwords. So he wrote a paper that you could find at bitbucket.org. He posted it anonymously. The paper is full of some beautiful images. He was able to create a botnet of hundreds of thousands of computers, all of which he got into by logging in through Telnet and using default passwords like root or root blank. Mm-hmm. The images, some of these images are amazing.
This is the one where he installed his own software on them to continue his plan. So yes, he's doing security research by creating a worm.
Which is why he, of course, is going to stay very anonymous, because this is an absolute violation of federal law and worldwide law and all things that are right. He took the stuff off, by the way, but after 6 months of doing this, he needed these because he had to use these botted computers to continue the census. It's a very big universe. He scanned every IP address looking for open Telnet ports. Some of them were on things like internet front-facing HP printers.
Oh, that's interesting.
With Telnet ports. It's really terrifying, and there's nothing anybody can do about this because these devices aren't going to be fixed. They're not going to be updated.
Right, and most people who have the attack, they don't know it.
They don't know.
And never will.
Right.
And half the most virus antivirus software won't catch
them. No, because they're not running antivirus. A lot of these, first of all, there's no antivirus for LaserJet printers routers.
Who's protecting their printer from being hacked?
Right. And a lot of this was Linux. Hundreds of thousands of Linux computers, 36,000 Apple computers using a DVD CD sharing agent.
Of course, like most guys Eric at this Coons. Level, he wasn't doing any damage here.
No, he
what
wasn't.
What could your printer really do that would be a bad thing?
Well, it's got a CPU and it's got an OS, so it can be used to further the botnet, as he did.
Yeah, that's what he did, is he updated the software. It's like you could do that with a Wi-Fi router, too. You put some software on it that makes it connect to other devices and
just works
keep
all night.
Going.
And usually these things work after midnight. They crank up. Next thing you know, your machine is sending out, or something is sending out data into the net.
It didn't make the printer, print out, you've been hacked.
That would be funny.
He could have done that.
That's what it should have done.
Yeah.
Could have done
that. Skull and crossbones.
Destroy your toner.
The other thing he found was huge amounts of black
sheets. You
my
wake
toner,
up in the morning.
No,
and
you destroyed my toner.
Black, a bunch of
more ink cartridges. They're expensive.
This ink scam is getting on my nerves.
Ink manufacturers should hire hackers to print.
The other thing
all
you
the
see, these are this image is the blocks, and there are huge black areas which are unused IP addresses owned by Ford Motor Company, the English government, things like that. And, of course, these are all IPv4
No wonder
addresses.
We ran out of IP
we
addresses.
We ran out because of all of these. Here's a great XKCD cartoon all about it, in which he shows who owns and how
HP
much
HP and Apple have their own
blocks.
Blocks of unused addresses.
Crazy. Yeah, these are /8 addresses that they just don't, they can't possibly use them all. So I just thought this was quite interesting. Unfortunately, now, because he's written this paper, bad guys know, if they didn't know already, how to use Telnet and to create massive botnets. That one of the reasons that malware propagates is because they want to take over machines, create botnets to attack.
Another
servers.
Reason to turn your machine off at night.
Or your printer.
And your,
or your
well,
router.
The printer. Yeah.
Or your.
I guess you can't turn everything off.
That's the problem, is that I think that this stuff will never be fixed. Now, where you're going to find out about this is, when is the next big sporting event? It's Kentucky Derby or the Indy 500?
Well, the next one's coming up. It's the
Memorial Day.
No, it's
March Madness.
Finals. The basketball finals, the final game, I predict.
Typically, we'll get to that in a moment, but typically the bad guys, what they do is they go to big gambling sites on big sporting events days, and they say, it would be a shame if your server would be to be discontinued during the betting for this
I'm
event.
Surprised this hasn't happened already.
You should do that in your Russian accent.
Yes, because probably Russian. So the thing that happens is, if you don't give us money, we will shut you down. Actually, we won't, but maybe somebody else would. We could prevent that. We would prevent you ever being attacked.
Prevent
it.
Yeah.
For a small amount of rubles. So, but now they can massive botnets, hundreds of thousands, maybe even millions of computers. Nothing anybody can prevent. So watch. I think this
might
be the thing
right.
to watch is the betting sites.
Well, the gambling is where all the money is.
Right. You go after.
Right. Especially in these big sporting events.
You don't go to Twit and say, hey, it would be a shame if the.
Yeah, if we shut down Twit.
Would be to shut down. I'll give you $1.50. What do you want?
The country's productivity would probably go up. The government may shut you down for that
it
reason.
It would be a terrible thing if you were not able to serve podcasts to hundreds of people. it would be terrible. Yeah, it would be, wouldn't it?
Yes.
All right. Break time. Audible.com. Ladies and gentlemen, Audible is the greatest audiobook store of all time. I say that without equivocation, without fear of contradiction. If you go to audible.com, you'll find over 100,000 titles, the best books in the world. Here's one for you, John, The Drunken Botanist, The Plants That Create the World.
Why me?
Because you're a drunk and you like plants. No, you like wine, right? You like gin? Almost every alcoholic beverage is made, starts with a plant, sake with a grain of rice. Scotch from barley, gin.
Are you doing this so I have to stay here to protect my reputation?
You can wander off.
Yeah. For a second, I thought you said the drunken botnet. I was really
the drunken botnet.
Oh my God!
I can't wait to read this, imagine? Amy Stewart. It's all about the plants that make great drinks, fermented, distilled, with over 50 drink recipes and growing tips for gardeners. That's a hybrid, isn't it? So they have nonfiction, but they also have great fiction. Science fiction, too. New one from Harlan Coben. New thriller, Scott Brick, narrating. They have the Hamilton books. I'm such a huge fan of Peter F. Hamilton.
Yeah.
They've got them all now. I think they've recorded them all. Let me just see what we've got here. I just downloaded the newest Peter F. Hamilton book. He writes long, but very well-written, very great characters, very thoughtful stuff, sci-fi, like Judas Unchained, Pandora's Star, The Dreaming Void. His newest is Great North Road. It is a mystery thriller set in the distant future. Wonderful. Now, I'm going to show you, you can get two books free. The reason I'm showing you all these books is you can get them for free. Or Zombies versus Nazis, the Zen of Zombies series. You know, there's a lot of zombie fiction on Audible. I'm not sure why. Maybe there's just a lot of zombie fiction out there right now. Anyway, there's also young adult fiction, which is fantastic. If you want to get a kid into reading, boy, what a great way to do that. So here's what you do. Go to audible.com/twit2. You'll be signing up for the Platinum plan. That's two books every month, but your first month is free. Your first two books are free. Cancel in the first 30 days. Pay nothing. Keep those books forever. I don't think you're going to want to cancel. The Audible app. Wonderful on the iPhone, Android phone. They've got one for Windows phone, and they've released their Audible app on Metro. I just installed it on my Windows 8 machine. It's beautiful. Highly, highly recommend. Audible.com. The best way to listen to books. If you spend a lot of time in the car, that's going to be a lifesaver. You listen to Audible books, don't you, Denise?
Oh, we couldn't live without them.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I mean, I keep myself going on them right now. I'm on a real Neil Gaiman kick, having gone through the Patrick Rothfuss.
Oh, so good.
I'm just finishing book two of the King Killer Chronicles.
Yes.
Oh, is it good?
Third one's not out yet. It's
not out. We're going to book Patrick for Triangulation. I'm gonna figure out what book three, what's going to happen in book three. Isn't it awesome?
Absolutely. And then for my son, I mean, all the kids' stuff and young
adult stuff. How old is he? He's like eight?
He's nine.
Nine.
And so we're on book 11 of the series of Unfortunate Events books.
I love
those.
Which
are read by...
Lemony Snicket.
But they're read by Tim Curry.
Oh, my gosh. And, perfect.
They're so good.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Love those books. And the neat thing about that is you might say, well, you want your kid to read. No, it gets them into reading, because then they say, oh, I got to find out what happens, and you pick up the book afterwards.
Yeah, I've wondered whether I'm taking away from his reading actual print books, but it's a different context. You do it in the car, you do it traveling, you know, hanging out in the airport waiting for the plane or whatever. You don't do it when you would sit on a couch and read.
Right.
So I think it's complimentary.
Audible.com/twit2. The whole family loves Audible books. I can vouch for that. We did a long road trip, and we listened to Bud Not Buddy and a bunch of really great young adult books. It was so much fun. I'll never forget it. Here's a story we had from our YouTube show. We're launching a new show called This Week in YouTube. It's right before Twit every Sunday with Lamara Wilson. I was stunned. YouTube reaches 1 billion monthly uniques.
Was that views or uniques? I thought it was views. I didn't think it was unique.
No, it's uniques.
No, that's bullcrap.
Views.
There's no way.
It's not. YouTube blind, is the man. Third most popular website in the world. It just reached 1 billion unique monthly users for the first time in history.
I'm not buying it.
How could you not buy it? Would they lie?
Too many. It's way too many. It's not possible.
Either nearly one out of every two people on the internet visits YouTube. Our monthly viewership is the equivalent of roughly 10 Super Bowl audiences.
Would they lie? Huh.
Well, they can't lie.
If the Super Bowl they can't because it's on the internet.
40 seconds long.
Facebook has a billion users, too, you know.
They have a billion users.
Monthly. Billion monthly users.
I'm not buying it.
Welcome to the internet.
Not buying
it's big, John.
It's not,
this internet thing is huge.
Possible.
John thinks it's a fad. It'll blow over.
It will.
It will. In a strong wind, it may.
Yeah, it will.
Well, Yahoo's apparently bidding to buy
stuff,
Daily Motion from French telecom Orange. Daily Motion is the European YouTube. Very big. It has nudity.
Well, let's go there.
Yeah. And Yahoo, I think, wants to be a player in this. So,
nudity?
No. They want to be a player in the big video thing. And I think when you know, Marissa Meyer knows very well how successful YouTube is. I think that this makes a lot of sense.
Huh.
It's a deal. How much
all
did YouTube
cost? All she's doing is cloning
cost?
Google. Is that what she's doing over there?
Yeah, she kind of is, isn't she?
Yeah.
How much
Good
did
luck.
YouTube cost? At $1.3 billion, I think, when Google bought it. They can it's a steal to get to Daily Motion is something like $700 million. Nothing.
Ah.
Chicken feed.
Yeah, is YouTube making money, though? Because they've got limited advertising and their bandwidth is absolutely enormous.
You've got to imagine the bandwidth. But again, does Google even pay for that bandwidth? They're probably peering
Somebody
relationships
does.
With everybody. No, they have peering relationships. It's free.
Well, you have this theory that the internet is generally free.
It is free.
It doesn't cost anything
if
to move
If you're YouTube,
a bit.
It's free. You know why?
Peering.
Peering. Am I
and
right?
The other YouTube economic point is they don't pay people a whole lot
That's true
who
too.
Are, you know, they're supposed to be paying
yeah,
out to.
Yeah, they're supposed to be paying. It's cheap. They're cheap.
Roughly, I am told... $1,500 per million views is roughly what it's worth. So if you had a video with...
Oh, you got this metric.
I got this metric.
$1,500 is the value per million views?
Million, yeah. It's $1.50 CPM.
Wow, that's low.
It's nothing.
Right.
Now, apparently that's about half or maybe a little less than half of what Google's charging, which is $3 or $4 CPM.
Hmm.
It's just, that's cheap, the cost per thousand. We charge, just for point of reference, $80 CPM.
You don't get $80 for everything.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, we do a little trick. Now, don't, if the advertisers, if you're listening.
Yeah,
put your
you talked about this when I was on the show last time.
I'm muting everyone's mics.
You already
right
told
now.
Us this trick.
Well, because you'll see when you see a version of two. First of all, we only have one advertiser per half hour, so it's four advertisers in the whole show. But when you begin the show, you get a billboard, you know.
And that's actually free.
No!
Everything's free except the 180 CPM ad.
No, well, so we charge them $40 for the billboard, but they have to buy it, and they have to buy an ad. So you have to buy two ads, each at $40. That's an effective CPM of $80 for Audible, for instance. So when I, you know, so audible.com.
That's not the way that the metric is calculated, by the way.
Shh. I don't know why we do it this way, but we do.
It's some scheme you came up with that was successful. You are very stubborn.
You know what? It wouldn't work if people didn't get good results from their ads.
This is true.
Right?
You have a very targeted audience. I remember when PC World came out. No, I'm sorry, not PC World, but PC Week.
Yeah.
Which was a smaller circ, 150,000 to 200,000 max circulation. And their CPM was $150.
Right.
And because it was extremely targeted.
This is where I came up with 70. Originally, my target was 70. We've gotten up to 80. But I did that research. I said, how much is a full-page ad in PC Magazine, in PC World? And it was about 110, 120 CPM. And how much is a radio ad? And I said, and it's about 10, 15 at most.
Yeah, maybe.
And so I said, well, we're somewhere in between. So I said 70. Now, that was years ago. We didn't get 70 right away.
Right.
But we worked our way up to it.
Yeah, it's a targeted audience.
Yeah.
You're selling the audience to the advertiser.
So that's the question. That's the question. Is
got it in there.
Is YouTube a good environment for advertisers? Obviously not, or they would be charging more than $3 or $4.
It's not targeted.
It's not targeted at all.
It's targeted to goofballs.
But it could be more targeted.
A billion
Google knows
goofballs.
Who's watching. They. I
yeah,
mean,
you're right. Mm, it's true.
It could be highly targeted. I don't know. Do I see ads? I don't think so. I keep seeing Zeus ads on That's the
Zeusk,
the dating site.
That's another dating site?
Yeah. Zeusk, and there's lots of the Zeusk ads.
See, farmers.com or whatever it is, a data farmer, there's another
there's
one.
There's a lot of lonely people out there, John.
Apparently. Yeah, well.
I also
tell them to get a dog.
LegalZoom, which advertises on Twit, also buys a lot of pre-roll on YouTube.
Yeah, pre-roll.
Pre-roll works because you have to sit through it to watch the video.
Yeah, which is fine as long as it's not like a 30-second video or a 20-second video.
Pre-roll should not be 30 seconds.
I saw a pre-roll.
Let's agree with this.
I saw a pre-roll for a TV. NBC runs ads before their ads for their own shows. They're like, hey, click here to see what's coming up on our shows later this week, and you have to sit through an ad to see an ad. That's crazy.
That's totally crazy. Pre-roll should be 15 seconds, period. There should be no pre-roll over 15 seconds long. You're just killing yourself.
A lot of... We've always turned down pre-roll. We've talked about pre-roll with people, and we've always turned it down.
You should.
Because I think people don't watch it. It's just annoying.
I agree.
It's like putting lipstick on
a
pig.
And you have a different model, and your model works fine.
I'm sorry. It's like teaching a pig how to play the banjo. Different anecdote.
Is this because we have Denise here? Is that the reason you've changed the anecdote?
No. You know what I'm talking about. Denise, right?
I know about pigs and banjos.
You never heard teaching? Let me Google it. Teaching a pig.
Oh, here we go.
Teaching a pig to sing. It's a quote from Robert Heinlein.
So
never try to teach a pig to sing. It wastes your time and it annoys the pig.
Is there any singing pigs on the YouTube? I bet you there are.
They probably are. They're singing goats.
The last time I was on YouTube, I saw a pre-roll ad, and after 5 seconds, it popped up a little button that said skip.
Yeah. Now, we were talking about that on our show this week in YouTube.
Oh, yeah. I've heard about
with
that.
With Lamar Wilson every Sunday, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern.
Who doesn't skip those?
Yeah, everybody does. That's what I'm.
I think the skip button is there to do metrics, because you have
to.
If you do a real solid thing at the beginning, that the real punchline is right up front, and then you push that button, you know they saw the beginning.
They watched it.
Yeah. Well, plus if they don't skip it, then you know you've got that many who are the like super engaged,
or they're in the bathroom,
and you sell those, or they're not paying attention.
Because that's what I do when I start a YouTube video. I get up, make a cup of coffee, come back. Dig did this very famously, where they said, what do you think of our advertisers?
Whatever happened to Dig?
Yeah. They actually, you know what? They're back.
They're going to do a Google Reader replay.
Dig 2, yeah. Ladies and
they
gentlemen.
They got purchased by, I can't remember the name. They do Newsly. BetaWorks. Thank you. Who said that?
I actually like Newsly. Jeff.
Yeah, I like Newsly a lot.
I didn't expect to,
social
but
news.
I do.
Newsly.
Yeah, no, I like it
anyway, what were you saying?
Dig used to ask people, do you like this ad or not? And they actually, that was valuable for them. Or actually, I think they even said, do you want to see this ad ever again? And if people say no, they don't show you the ad ever again. Facebook does that,
yeah.
And Google does it too?
Hulu.
And the advantage is you get, for the advertiser wants this, you get a metric. And people who want to see the ad are seeing the ad. It's one way of kind of measuring engagement.
I'd say no to all of them. That makes no sense.
Well, that's why they don't advertise to you. You don't buy anything. What do you buy?
I buy...
What are you the decider for? What product?
Food.
All right.
I buy all the food.
So this is the problem, is I don't know how anybody would target you with food ads. I mean, how would they even know that you, this... Right? How would they do an ad for you? What would they buy to get to you?
They would become a producer of the No Agenda Show.
That's what they do. A night,
or we actually stretch it now. We have Knights, Knights and Earls and Dukes. We have a whole series. All the entire major peerages have been extrapolated for the No Agenda.
How long
producers.
Before the peerage gets their head chopped off when the people storm the Bastille?
Well, that could happen.
Could happen. Google has decided to do a note-taking app. They're going after Evernote with Google Keep. They launched that this week. You know, this is an interesting problem Google has. After on the heels of killing Google Reader, is anybody going to trust Google anymore? Because now you know they could kill this at any time.
And if it doesn't take off, they will.
They will.
Yes,
and so
this is a bad reputation to have.
It is a bad reputation.
This is the downside.
Whether
of
merited
their...
or not, I mean, Evernote is probably equally likely to go away. But you're using Evernote. You're not going to switch to Keep, especially in light of the fact that Google just dumped Reader and could very. In fact, there's a graph. I'll see if I can find it on Google. You know, the average length of a Google product. It's not very long.
Well, I mean, so many of them, that's Google strategy, right, is they throw a bunch of spaghetti against the wall and see what sticks. And they've tried to have some discipline about taking the stuff that is a flop and killing it. But if you're a user of that thing, then you're going to be pretty grumpy.
Yeah, but
you never know whether something's going to make it or not.
Yeah, but they've changed their style about that. I mean, they used to keep most of the stuff.
Yeah.
And now they're killing stuff that's successful. Google Reader is not a flop.
Well, that's the real question. Why did they kill Reader in the face of, obviously, a lot of people who use it?
Well, you know, the big milestone in Google Reader's history was when they removed all the sharing features, all the social features that people actually use to share stories.
They killed it.
And pushed that all to Google Plus. Yeah.
Well, somebody said this is the Microsoft of old. Embrace, extend, what was it? Embrace and devour?
Yeah, it was something like
Something like that. Yeah. Where Microsoft, you say embrace, extend, but originally embrace and devour.
Well, embrace, extend, and suffocate.
Yeah, and that's what Google did with RSS. They said, hey, we like this RSS thing. They made the Google Reader, put all these RSS readers out of business. And then they kill the reader. They effectively killed RSS.
Well,
I don't
RSS,
know if they did it on tension.
It's not intention. Dead.
No, it's in fact, dead. If you listen to podcasts, RSS is how people get your shows.
Yeah, they just strangled the kind of third-party market for a lot of this stuff. There's all these third-party news readers and which is fine. That's competition. But then they kind of almost immediately disengaged their developers and let it kind of die on the vine.
Yeah, they literally had zero people working at Google Reader.
Yeah, the rumor is that it just broke last week or 2 weeks ago, and they tried to find somebody who could fix
it. Nobody works on
this. Well, okay, we'll fix it, but maybe we shouldn't keep this product around if we have nobody to work on.
I wrote a column in the PC Magazine advocating that they turn this code over to public domain. Make it open source. They got the code. Yeah. They're not using it anymore. They've discontinued it. Just give it away. Give it to the public and let the public do with it as they wish.
Well, you know, what's going to happen is that they're going to – so many people have already reverse engineered the API for Google Reader that that's what's going to happen next is that everybody's going to just put up their clones of the Google Reader API.
That works.
There's so many news readers that rely on Google Reader to do
their jobs.
That's
the problem because Google was providing a back end. They were – The real, and we've talked about this with Kevin Marks on This Week in Google, and Kevin Marks created Technorati, wrote the code for Technorati that went out and spidered sites, and he said this is actually a challenge because you don't want every site doesn't want 100 different readers pinging. Is there something new? Is there something new? Google was giving you the infrastructure where they could do that once they were spidering it anyway. It was part of their indexing. Right. They were really perfectly situated to do this, and giving it up is really deleterious to the internet. Economy. Go ahead, Denise. I'm sorry.
Is this an artifact of tablet computing that people just aren't doing their RSS on their desktops anymore, but maybe on their
I think for
iPad
sure we use
tablet?
Flipboard and we use I think it's also an artifact of social media like Twitter. In fact, Dave Weiner said, you know, this is the replacement of the inbox, the mail metaphor for reading news to the river of news.
But I know a lot of people who use RSS readers on their iPad, and they all sync to Google Reader. So what's going to happen now?
Liz Gaines?
I use Twitter mostly for links. Now.
I think that's what most people do.
Mm-hmm.
Liz Gaines on All Things D says, another reason Google Reader died, increased concern about privacy and compliance. That's an interesting take. There may be a reason more than just whether this is a good business. Google...
knowing what people are reading.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Regulators, of course, have been going after Google like crazy for a variety of things. Google won't say how many people use Google Reader, but Mike McHugh from Flipboard said that 2 million people have connected Google Reader accounts to the Flipboard
app. I did that.
I did too.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a lot of people who had at least had accounts and were interested in what was on that reader account.
You know who's not really crying about this, though, is publishers, because RSS was never a really great – it's not a bad traffic generator, but it's not a great ad platform. People generally prefer RSS feeds with the content in the feed, at which point – if there are no ads there, it's not that good. And then you mentioned about caching. I mean, one of the problems with Google Reader is, yeah, you don't have to have that big infrastructure, but it also means you can't count. It's harder to tell how many people are behind that Google feed. Plus, if you post something new, it doesn't go live until Google decides it's time.
So from the publisher point of view, it's really a crappy way for – you would prefer people didn't use Reader to look at your articles.
It was not the best. I mean, we tried some stuff with it. If you didn't have an RSS feed that was very popular, it would decrease how often it
pinged you.
It pinged you. And so we had some like custom feeds that we were setting up, and they basically were unusable in Google Reader because they wouldn't update except every 6 hours or every 12 hours.
So publishers might be saying, yay.
I think maybe they are. I mean, it is a traffic source.
Are you going to pull RSS?
No, no.
Well, there you go.
No, but Google Reader was like putting Google between us and, the readers, right?
You'd rather have somebody just
use a newsreader.
Go direct, right? Rather than going
Well, that was the
argument
against it, which was there's too many pings. You're going to get pounded now by all these individuals.
I never made that argument.
Yeah, well, I don't think it's I think it's a bull crap argument. You don't get that much. So you're bing, bing, bing. It's not going to be, you know, like you're not already pounded.
No, the people who it made life easy for were app developers, because app developers didn't have to check 50 different servers one at a time, some in Atom, some in RSS, some malformed. Google Reader made it like one API call to one server. Everything was in one format, so it was super easy for them. And if you used like a podcast client, like I use Downcast on my iPhone.
Me too, yeah.
And you know, you hit reload there, and it's like 1, 2, 3, right, because it actually is going to every single one of those. So the app developers having a middleman is great. Publishers maybe not so much.
Nick Baum, Liz Gaines quotes Nick Baum, one of the original product managers, said that in the early days, several million weekly active users used Google Reader. But he said, my sense is if it's a consumer product at Google that's not making money, unless it's going to get 100 million users, it's not worth
doing. Well, I thought they dribbled down to 500,000 users at the end.
No, we know that 2 million people signed up their Google Reader, Flipboard. The irony, Baum said, is if Google Reader were out seeking venture funding in Silicon Valley right now, with its high-value audience, it most likely would have gotten it. It would be a good startup.
Yeah, I'm telling you, just give it to the public domain. Why are they going to sit on this code? This
is
typical. Why?
It's probably integrated into all their stuff and their crawlers.
There's a lot of proprietary code in there. Some people have proposed that, and Google says, nah, we can't do that.
You can disassemble that.
The sad thing is if Liz Gaines is right, and I haven't read her piece, so I don't know if she picked up on this too, it's more of a window dressing kind of a step, right? I mean, think about how much else Google knows about you. If they can hang this up and say, oh, look, Department of Justice, we're not paying attention to what people are reading anymore, they still have, you know, the rest of your life.
Good point. It's too bad that Google has to worry so much about privacy. I think we should just give them, like, free pass.
What?
Well, because then we could get great stuff free. They're giving you good stuff for free.
Yeah, so they can monetize you.
So what?
So they can exploit you.
Well, you don't have to use it, John.
As a matter of fact. I don't use Google Mail except for just emergencies. I do have a good account.
What are you afraid that Google's going to read your mail?
Trunk.
I don't like the idea of having an entire mail thread for 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years of mail being owned by somebody other than myself. I just find it somewhat annoying. It's like the post office sending my mail to Google, letting them look at it and then say, okay, here it is, Dvorak. I just don't like it. I think it's, if nothing else, it's creepy.
That's why Eric Schmidt uses a BlackBerry.
Does he?
Did you see that? Yeah.
He's no fool.
I feel like Google is so big at this point that I don't feel like it's creepy anymore, because it's so big that
you've been
scroogled.
You've been scroogled.
Yes, I have.
Yeah. That gets me because
Gmail, you know,
I use Gmail too. Who cares? Google's not fitting. There's not a human being going, let's see what John wrote today.
There could be.
There's not though.
I know there's not
there
yet.
Be.
Yet.
Jason, your argument then is it's such big data that even Google can't parse it.
Yeah, I mean, I was never really creeped out, but yeah, I mean, the idea that there is this, anything that's going on is programmatic, and I just feel like you get sued by somebody,
and somebody says, "Well, Discovery, here, just download everything."
They can do that on your other mail host too. They could do that for your ISP.
When Microsoft had Discovery during one of their suits, all kinds of stuff came out by accident. It wasn't, you know, it was part of the Discovery process, which is the thing people fear the most. And just leaving yourself wide open with all this mail that you have on this server that is very easy to get to nowadays.
But that's
crazy.
That's not a Gmail thing. I mean, Gmail lets you save lots of mail there, but that's just a files
live. We got a lawyer here. Let me ask.
So burn before burn after reading.
She knows what Discovery's all about. It's horrible.
Burn during reading.
So in Discovery, if John gets sued, he's in a law. Let's say me. We don't want to include John.
I'm judgment proof. I got no money. You got the big dough.
I got the big dough. So yes. I'm not. I got deep pockets. I'm ready. Come on, sue me. So I get sued, and they want to know, can they depose my Gmail records? I have to give it to them, right? Not Google.
Them for sure. Yes.
But Google doesn't give it to them. I do.
No. Google gives it to them.
Both. They'll ask for it from you, and if they don't get it from you, they'll ask for it from Google.
And Google will say no.
What?
Google what? Will say yes?
Of course.
Do you work for Google?
No.
Okay. No, they don't say yes. They even have this whole, you know, transparency document, which they say how often they refuse government. If there's a subpoena,
That's what we're talking about.
Yeah. Anybody who has a lawsuit pending and a lawyer can issue a subpoena.
To any provider. So if you are on a local ISP or you're on Yahoo or you're on Outlook.com, it doesn't really matter. If your mail is there or in a backup somewhere, they're going to get
it. Can Google not say no?
Google can say no.
Right.
Google
and I think they frequently do say no.
From other sources. Google can advise the party if they are not somehow in the loop that, hey, we're being asked for your records.
What if it's a national security letter?
That's different, by the way. Good news on that, but we'll talk about that in a minute.
It looks like good news.
Oh, I knew John wouldn't be happy. So, so Google has this transparency report in which they reveal, in this case, how many user data. That would be a user data request, right? How many user data requests.
Yeah, this is just requests.
And what
it's
they
not
do.
A subpoena.
Let's look at the United States of America. That's where we live, here in the U.S. of A. Oh, these are national security letters. By the way, they can't tell you exactly in terms of national security letters. So they say we receive somewhere between 0 and 1,000 national security letters. Because they're not allowed to.
Could be zero.
Could be zero. Could be 1,000.
How they got away with pulling this one off is beyond me.
Percent of requests where some data was produced. Wow, it's pretty close to 100 almost all the time. These are subpoenaed requests, the blue dot. It's somewhere between, it looks like 90%. Okay, never mind. 90% of subpoenas are complied with, or at least some data is produced.
Well, let me mention something to retort or give a retort to one of Jason's assertions, which is that, y'all, what difference does it make? They can go to your ISP and get the data and all the rest. You can maintain a POP account someplace, or you can even your IMAP account on some local guy's little operation. And if you know the guy specifically, like my friend who runs the mailer,
right.
You can take the stuff off, erase it as part of your process. Nothing new, not to destroy evidence, but just some way of just getting rid of all this. You don't know that Google hasn't got everything backed up. They back up all your searches, for God's sake, and they keep that stuff for 18 months. It's possible that every email you've ever done on Gmail is still on the servers, whether you erased it or not.
I'm pretty sure your ISP backs up its servers, though, too.
Everybody does.
No, the ISP. No, I don't have mail through my ISP. I have mail through independent
podcast service.
What do you mean?
But do
it's
they back
a great
up that
service.
Server?
I get no spam.
Yeah.
But do they back up that server? Because if they keep backups, then they can subpoena your mail on those backups, too.
So, Denise, this
it's
is
a rolling
this
backup.
Says,
it's not
this
an
says,
archive backup.
Okay. This says Google got formal requests issued under the Electronic Communications Privacy Act for the production of information. May not involve a judge. They received 5,000 in the U.S., 5,784 requests July through December last year. 10,000 accounts, and they complied with some data anyway, 88% of those.
Right.
Is that what you're talking about? These could have been depositions, or I mean, discovery motions
subpoenas.
In a civil suit.
Yeah. Depositions are where you sit down in a room with someone and ask them questions.
Yeah, discovery. Yeah.
But you can subpoena information from Google, but what Google can then do, you know, if you've decided to be obstreperous and you're not going to produce something responsive in discovery, which is a bad decision, you should... You know, respond to discovery and make the process.
So my lawyers say don't put anything in writing.
Well, no, I mean you got to do business, right? Things are going to be in writing from time
but
to time.
I do a lot of stuff in secret that I don't tell anybody. Now, see that, by the way, they're going to show that in court.
Boom. Yeah, they would.
Believe that, jury. I was making it up. It was a joke.
They cut that out. You're done. Just forget it. They just cut that last part out.
Edit AMA into the sentencing, right? So be careful.
That's right.
But
they don't
but
care.
What I was going to say is, even if they go to Google and say, okay, we need this person's entire email account. Well, in litigation, the judge is going to demand, and hopefully your lawyer is going to come in and object and say, we need to have this narrowly tailored to what you actually need to know for this lawsuit.
Ah.
And so you're not, it's not that scary that you could actually, give up your entire life.
Tell that to General Petraeus.
Right. well, yeah, that was a different situation. But when you're litigating, you have, fortunately, you have counsel who's looking after you, hopefully, and they're going to come in and object and say, no, this is overbroad. And if it's, you know, they're going to respond and actually give over the things that are going to help the lawsuit go forward.
Right.
And Google's never going to be involved in that process anyway. But right. to the extent that Google has to be involved, you know, again, you can come in and object and go, no, this is not responsive to what we actually need in the
suit. So would it be your counsel that people do what John does, which is not store something on Google, but instead store it with some obscure service that has, as a matter of policy, not for destroying of evidence, but merely as a matter of policy, every 6 months deleting everything?
That would be good.
It's certainly not a terrible idea. I think that it's not terribly practical for many besides John. You know, a lot of people need to do business with the tools that they have most readily.
What, aren't I supposed to email? I mean, come on.
Aren't I supposed to keep like years worth of email records? Isn't that
no?
Kind of,
that's bull crap.
That's not a requirement of some sort.
Not in the, you know, there are certain regulated industries where you have to keep right. records for a certain amount of time.
I think podcast industry is heavily regulated.
Yes. We're there yet.
Okay, it's that 1986 good. Law that does it. Man, kills podcasts. I like keeping old mail around just because sometimes I find it useful to be able to search
me too.
Through a message from 3 years ago.
I never delete email.
Yeah.
I keep it all.
Nope. You heard that, jury.
One more outburst and I'll clear this courtroom.
Again, I mean, the only email anybody should be able to get to is what's relevant to their dispute.
Right.
Yeah.
But how do we know what's relevant until we look at it all?
That's what comes out a lot of times. Okay, national security letter. So you think that they've finally
so put this a federal
kibosh,
judge
kibosh
in the much beloved Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals,
our favorites,
because they're flaming liberals,
highly entertaining group.
Yes.
Said that it was, well, the interesting thing is, and Denise, again, you can qualify this because you actually understand the law, but she said that it was a violation of free speech because one of the things a national security letter does is say, we want this information and you may not tell anybody that we've requested it. And she particularly took issue with that feature of the national security letter.
Yeah.
And said that was a violation of First Amendment. Does that overturn the idea of using an NSL entirely?
No. It is a trial court at the federal court level who has issued their opinion about this. And I'm sorry, you said it was the Ninth Circuit, right?
I thought it was the Ninth Circuit. Am I wrong?
You know, here we go.
I'll look it up. You got Pacer there?
I'm looking.
Federal judge bans unconstitutional national security letters. It was the Ninth Circuit.
I was right. It's the trial court.
Yeah. Susan Ilston.
So now this is the process of how this kind of issue like gets cookie. Before the Supreme Court.
Do you think that's her or is that just...
I don't know, but that woman there is a tough cookie.
That's a great picture. If I were a judge, I would want a picture like that on my website.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you the hammer. What is that word? Fawoopa? I'm going to give you the hammer. So she said that the now, presumably, she ordered the government to stop issuing NSLs.
Huh.
But presumably the government's going to go to the Supreme Court with this, right?
Or the Ninth Circuit first. Oh. That would be the first stopping point.
Oh, she's a judge in the Ninth Circuit, but this was not a ruling by the Ninth Circuit. I get it.
Yes. She's a trial court judge.
Got it.
So she is overseen by the folks you're so entertained by on
Circuit.
The Ninth Circuit,
yeah.
And they are overseen by the Supreme Court.
So the government has 90 days to appeal to the Ninth Circuit, and then failing that, go on up higher to the Supreme Court. Right. I presume
it's
the
very
government,
dubious process.
Because the Obama administration really loves these NSLs, I presume the government will, in fact, pursue this.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. They keep issuing them, too.
A trial court, this is sort of the trial court judge saying, you know.
By the way, this is not Susan Ilston. This is not Susan Ilston.
That's a shame.
This is from Shutterstock. This is
a
stock photo.
Just a picture of a
random generic
judge.
You know, I got to tell you, that's really not probably.
But I like the idea of what you said. That would be a good judge picture.
Put that in your brochure for your judging. Yes.
That's the court of stock photography.
Yes, in the court of stock photography. Anyway, so, but I would say, provisionally, I'm excited about this. This does seem like a.
Why are you worried about getting an NSL?
These NSLs are appalling.
Yeah, I know they're horrible.
Don't you think?
Yeah, they're
I understand we need to fight terrorism,
it's not fighting anything. It's just it's abuse of power. It's an abuse. It's an abusive
something
product.
Out of Animal House, double secret probation.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to ask you who ate hummus at your restaurant in the last 6 months, and you can't tell anybody we asked you.
Right, and if you do, we're going to throw you in jail.
You go to jail.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It is.
But don't you think...
the public doesn't care, by the way.
Don't you think Homeland Security needs some teeth and needs some ability to chase these
They're already
guys?
Bigger than judges, the U.S. Marine Corps.
Judges that can give... I mean, there's a system that lets them prove that they...
Does the NSL go through FISL, or is it...
So one of those special.
Who is FISL? Is that the FISL? Federal Reserve Board? No. What is the FISL. What is the court? The FISA Isn't court. Does it go through the FISA court?
It's Omar Sharif in Lawrence of Arabia. No, that's confusing.
My son FISL. No. Do they go through FISA? No, they don't. This is just.
Maybe they
there's
go through
no judge.
FICA, and then they get their
no judge. They get their Social Security.
No, I mean the process is the government goes to a judge and shows why they have cause, and then the judge says okay. I mean
they don't even
process.
Need to do that.
Yeah, well, I think there's just a guy in an office. Hey, you know, you should put this guy's name on this letter, and they type it up, and they say that's a cool letter, and they take it to some guy, and they hand it to him, and that's
have you
the
ever
end
received
it.
One?
No, I couldn't say if I did. Could
that's
I?
Right. They actually have hackers who hack a printer, which then prints it out.
Yeah, a hacker should be sending these things out.
Yeah, hacked printers with national security letters in them.
Why not?
Here's the good news. Google Fiber is expanding. Here's the bad news. It's expanding to Olathe, Kansas.
Yeah, this is ridiculous. Why don't they get a clue and put it here in the Bay Area? It's a Bay Area company, for God's sake. What kind of insult is this to the locals that Google's out there in the middle of nowhere putting fiber in at something like 10 gigabits is some ridiculous speed. And meanwhile, we're here suffering.
Suffering,
we're
I
suffering.
Tell you. Suffering. 125,000 people live in Olathe, Kansas. How do you pronounce that?
Olathe.
Oh, there. You
it's
got
an Olathe.
You got a Google information card there.
Yeah, Google knows that I care about Olathe now.
Olathe. Now Google now will tell you the commute phone. Time.
When you open your phone up, it'll have you the driving instructions.
Yeah, to Olathe.
Olathe does.
Well, if it has Google Fiber, I might want to go there. Go ahead.
Anything in Kansas is a sandbox, right? This is how they decide whether or not it's working.
They're testing.
You want to test. You know, that's like a violation of all the rules of marketing. You always test your top spots first, because if you know if it fails there, what's the point?
Right.
You don't test like when you do mailing list tests. You always test the best list you can, not the worst list because it's cheap. Because if it fails or if it does well in the worst list, doesn't mean it's going to work anyway. You learn nothing. So they should be testing this in the Olathe. San Francisco Bay Area.
Magpie in the chat room says it is Olathe.
Olathe.
Or we're being trolled.
No. Magpie no, probably lives in Olathe.
Olathe.
Half the chat room lives there.
We're going to take a break for a house ad. Do you mind, John?
What?
When
did you start doing house ads?
Honey baked hams. No, not for Honey Baked Hams.
When did you start doing house ads?
Long time ago. Right about when you started doing No Agenda twice a week.
Huh.
Same, roughly the same
4 years ago.
Yes.
Huh. Interesting.
First, let's find out what's up in the week ahead. Tom Merritt.
Hey, thanks. Here's some of the stories we'll be keeping an eye on in the week ahead on Tech News Today. On Monday, March 25th, Game Developer Conference, GDC, kicks off in San Francisco. That'll run until March 29th. Tuesday, March 26th, BioShock Infinite comes out. We're set to get details on Battlefield 4, and T-Mobile has a press event. Thursday, March 28th, the Verizon BlackBerry Z10 is available. Ouya's Android gaming console is supposed to start shipping to backers of their Kickstarter. The Samsung Galaxy S4 goes on for pre-order in the UK, and we get BlackBerry's earnings as BlackBerry, not RIM. That's a look at the week ahead. Back to you.
Previously on TWiT, Tech News Today.
It'll be the iPhone 5S. Nothing is different.
The S is for Sapphire.
S for Sapphire.
There you go.
Duh.
Beautiful.
Done.
Yep.
Beautiful.
Nothing's different, but it's made of Sapphire. Buy it. It's twice as much.
Frame rate.
The biggest surprise to me is how much people love watching other people play video games.
For some people, this is their live sports, right? Esports is what they want to watch. They don't care about people with circular objects running around on a field.
Matt Break Weekly.
There's nothing wrong with Tim Cook. It's just that he's not that.
And
he's
kind of
pedestrian.
Yeah, well, I mean,
let's
face
it.
I mean, the issue
is Jobs knew this was a problem. I would guarantee you, Jobs is thinking all the time. Yeah, we're gonna lose the light. We're gonna lose the press. Let's keep this interesting. Let's keep the story. Let's manage the story. He was brilliant at managing the story.
Twit, take it to the bank.
So everybody left, Denise, during those commercials. You should have got. Would you like a macaroon?
Oh, I'd love one.
Yeah, these are good. Just in time for Passover.
Delicious. They're not. Poor Jolie did not bring them in.
No, Angelina Jolie.
They get them at Costco.
How did you know?
I can tell.
You're right. It's
you
a Costco.
You should get those Aussie Bites.
Are good?
Yeah, they actually are good.
Mm-hmm. As long as we're talking macaroons, I will say we had a darn funny twill last week.
Tell me about it. Spagnola. What happened?
We had Ali Spagnola on, who's also been on NSFW. She's the gal who does music in any number of contexts, but also in the context of a drinking game called the Power Hour, where you drink a shot of beer for an hour, and she's done this series of one-minute songs.
A shot of beer?
To accompany.
A shot of beer for an hour? No, every minute for an hour?
Every minute for an hour. That's the Power Hour.
A it's shot a of beer?
60 shots of beer does not sound like a good idea.
It doesn't sound like more than a can.
It's 60 ounces of beer.
Yeah, it's like a 40. Times
I think
two.
Evan on our show calculated it was like a 6.5-pack. So it's really,
it's not so
a lot of beer, but it's not going to kill you, maybe.
Yeah, but you'd be peeing a lot.
Body mass.
So,
the Power Hour came about long after my collegiate career, so it was unfamiliar to me. It only came to my attention when Ali won a great trademark dispute where someone tried to shut her down because she was using the phrase Power Hour for this game that was really a generic phrase for the game and not trademarkable. So we had her on to discuss her travails in the legal system. And then we talked about porn, too. So
what's sounds like well, tell us about the porn
Tom
conversation.
Tom Z in the chat room said it was the best twill ever.
Yeah, folks in IRC were loving it.
They were loving it. Yeah. So powerhourzone.com, the number one online drinking game. Is that hers? Or is there others?
The game is just a game, like quarters or beer pong or whatever.
But
she has done music to accompany the game. And she does concerts, live events, where she goes and performs her song.
Here's my question. Does the music speed up or slow down as the hour goes by?
I think it's the same. Every song is 1 minute long, and then you drink at the end.
Is this a continuation of the house ad?
This is awesome.
Right, see the U.S. shot glass? He has the patent on the U.S. shot.
I like that.
I think we should do it on this show.
So she does 61-minute songs.
With scotch.
Oh, man.
New.
With scotch.
New.
That'd be like a power 10 minutes.
No. How about coffee? Would you do it with coffee?
Oh, God.
No.
That's just the equivalent of a 6-pack of coffee.
Now what you do, here's a trick. This is a good one, too. You get a big bottle of Jack Daniels, and you brew some tea with the exact same color, and you put the tea in the bottle, and then you...
That's how they do it in Hollywood.
Yeah. It looks like a bottle of Jack Daniels, mm-hmm. exactly. But it's just black tea. And you could do the shots with that, and you could make it look like you're drinking a ton of Jack Daniels. I don't know what you'd accomplish. You look like a drunk.
They're going to show that clip at the trial.
At the trial. Yeah.
Apparently, there is already a power twit drinking game.
I'm sure there's plenty.
Every time you say meh.
Meh? Right. Well, it used to be when I said dvorak.org/blog.
So we've received a note from our iPad winner already, and he wants John and Jason's signature on his iPad.
But not Leo's. He doesn't want your signature.
Are you kidding?
I'm kidding.
Oh, there goes the iPad. Leo will stomp it now.
Well, I see that's how you feel about it. All right. I'm just going to get his name here so I can put him in my book. Dave Kokandi.
The blacklist.
You're on my list, buddy.
So one more for Ali Spag. Her victory tour, she has a Indiegogo up to...
Really, she can't afford shirts that go all the way down, though.
No. It's a shame.
That's why she's doing Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Yeah, she needs clothes.
You've got to see her video where she's describing her court experiences, and she's gone into a courtroom and is sort of laying across the jury box. And
oh my God, you're kidding!
No, it's hysterical. No, it's wonderful.
I need to watch this. I need to get pointers. Mm-hmm. So
are you going to do that?
Well, I might have to. We'll see. I'll do whatever it takes. Go ahead, put that on talented. The jury reel. So now we can move on to other topics. We mentioned fiber. Have we mentioned that humanity has left the solar system?
Mm-mm.
Or maybe not.
Is it coming back?
Not coming back. We're talking about Voyager, which has been voyaging.
Oh, that thing.
Voyager 1, right?
Voyager
1.
Yeah,
it comes back.
Does it? Is it a slingshot thing?
No, it comes back with the robot guy and the whole thing.
Oh, with Star Trek, the motion picture, right. Yeah.
You're right.
Mm-hmm.
Voyager and 1 and 2 have been in space for 33 years. They've traveled 11.5 billion and 9.5 billion miles, respectively. The question is, have they passed beyond the orbit of Pluto yet?
Oh, no, they have passed the orbit. It's about if they're in interstellar space.
Yeah.
But, and nobody knows quite what that means.
Well, again, what happens according to the Shatner book, this is not this is not part of the regular Star Trek. According to the Shatner book, it was that thing bumped into the Borg.
Ah.
And then it was actually the Borg who sent it back, all modified.
That's logical.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, I follow that. No, so they're using the sensors on the Voyager to find out when they're like particles
Not outside our solar system when you go beyond Pluto. So, you're outside the solar system when what?
This is the big argument.
Nobody knows.
Because there's no like dividing line that's like now entering, now leaving the solar system. Goodbye. Right. There's no sign out there. So the question is it outside the, what they're thinking is the solar wind pushes out from the sun, but then outside the solar system in interstellar space, it's all energized particles from the rest of the galaxy.
And
they're trying to find that dividing line where the sun's influence kind of fades away. But there are lots of other ways you could draw that line. You could draw it with like the
scientists. Like are such pitches when they get in a fight like this.
Well, this is the worst kind of stuff for science, right? It's just like Pluto being a planet, right? Because it's completely arbitrary.
It's
about how you define it. And so that's when the scientists get all catty and start arguing about what I define the solar system as being the Oort cloud.
I would say because of the false vacuum discovered by the Higgs boson that perhaps when this thing kicks it out to the middle of nowhere, it resets the universe and we're all dead.
Maybe there'll be some energy. Dark energy?
Well, I don't know. Maybe,
can we agree that the Voyager has gone...
Where
no man has gone before. Can we agree on that?
No. Yeah.
This is the furthest away man-made object, which
you
is
you don't
cool.
know this.
What happened to Pioneers 10 and 11? They came before Voyager.
They're slower. They're slower because these slingshotted around planets, so they're further out, both of them. I think Voyager 2's not as far out because they put it around more planets, whereas
Voyager 2
1
went around four planets. Voyager 1 just went around two.
Flung around Jupiter and then out.
And then out above the solar system.
Yeah, really fast.
And Voyager 1 is the one that has the Brady Bunch episodes on it.
It has the golden record.
Golden record.
It has the golden record with Carl
both
Sagan.
Both of them do.
Both of them do. And the human, the naked guy going like this.
So right? is the one that's going to Pluto going to pass Voyager 1 in the record book someday? Is it going faster?
It just could take a long
time. You know,
time.
Just, I don't know. It's not a race. It's not a competition, space probes.
Try to go back to a tech topic.
This is a tech topic. This is science.
The science.
These probes are only slightly older than the telecommunication laws that are throwing hackers in jail.
I know. 1977.
Slightly.
Voyager 2 launched in 1977.
Yeah. A clunker.
August 20th. 6 days later, Voyager 1 launched. And that was so it has the golden record that has what? Singing?
Yeah,
music?
Voices and...
It has a lot of data on there. There's pictures, video, music, voices, babies crying. There's a ton of data on there.
And the aliens are going to open it up and be like, why are the babies crying?
What's wrong? Right. What's wrong on that planet? The babies are crying.
It was assembled by Carl Sagan.
Mm-hmm. Right.
115 images, a variety of natural sounds, such as those made by surf, wind, and thunder, birds, whales, and other animals. And they added musical selections from different cultures and eras and spoken greetings from Earth people in 55 languages, printed messages from President Carter, that's when this thing was launched,
yep.
and UN Secretary
Even
General
people on Earth don't
time.
Remember him.
So here's a sample. This is from a YouTube series of 31 videos, each of them around 12 minutes long. So around 30 minutes of data. And this is...
That's a whale. Oh, I'm playing the readings in 55 languages.
I was like, how? Yeah, so I just muted you.
Chuck Berry doing Johnny B. Good.
Oh, there we go.
Is that Chuck?
No.
Play mine. Don't play yours. Okay, you got monkeys. I got Chuck Berry. Here's a men's house song from New Guinea.
You know, just like a Simpsons episode, this thing goes out there and it goes right into some sun. Done.
Peruvian pan pipes.
So do we even have the technology on Earth to read this record now?
Yes.
It's a record. That's the beauty of it. It's just, you look at it, it's analog waveforms.
Yeah, but it's got pictures and stuff on it, and that's got to be encoded as data. Right?
Why did they include Dark Was the Night by Blind Willie Johnson?
Somebody like Blind Willie Johnson.
Music.
I don't know.
It's roots. Here's an Indian raga. A Pygmy Girls initiation song. This
There's
is great.
A lot of stuff
so
on
this
there.
Is goldenrecord.org, which is a neat site. That has the image of the Voyager on it. You can zoom in on it and see where the golden record is. See, it's right there on the side so that they could find it. And then there's the images
record. So that's a map of so Earth's map. Place.
As soon as the aliens get a hold of it, they'll be playing Frisbee.
Those are like Earth's distance from like pulsars or something. So it's supposed to actually be a map of where we are.
It's cool. And exactly. If you click the record, you can actually see
the Secretary General of the United Nations, an organization of 147 member states who represent...
In some ways, this is a beautiful memory of how naive and innocent we were in 1977.
Yeah, this is a pathetic example of wishful thinking.
Uh-huh.
Well, I mean, you got to do it.
Well,
you don't have to do anything.
Sagan was the one who came up with the idea, I think, who said, if we're
Sagan, the same guy that says we're going to have during the lighting of all those Kuwait wells... There was going to go into the upper atmosphere and then poison the entire Earth. Is that the same Sagan you're talking about?
Yeah, probably the same
guy. So he was wrong.
No, it's kind of nice though, isn't it, sweet? He's like, look, we're going to send this thing way out into the universe. It's going to be going in a straight line for billions of years. Why don't we put a little
billions
thing on
billions.
It to explain billions of years? Why not put something on it that says who sent it? It's nice.
Wonderful. It's the audacity of hope.
Exactly.
This is so nice. You're right.
When the Borg get this,
how much did it cost?
Then they know where to find us.
Right.
Yeah. And it creates Star Trek: The Motion Picture.
I think it's very sweet.
The Borg.
But it's kind of slightly innocent. It feels a little innocent and sweet.
It's corny.
It's a message in a bottle.
I think what we should do is load up one of these things with lots of bacteria and infect the entire world, the galaxies, with life. That makes more sense than sending.
I think that's
some...
what happened already. That's
probably
why
did
we're
that
here.
Too. Yeah.
Well, it's possible. That's kind of
Do you know that Jeff Bezos is searching for Apollo rockets on the ocean floor? They've already discovered two massive F1 engines. Thought to have propelled the massive Saturn V rockets. This is what he's doing
for his office. What's he need?
This is what he's doing with the money he makes on Amazon. Jeez. They're recovering old Apollo engines, 14,000 feet of water. I'm surprised James Cameron didn't think of this first. I mean, I don't know what you do with these, but they're hoping it's from Apollo 11.
You know what? This is a front for some CIA operation.
You've been talking to Adam Curry
too
long.
No, I'm just telling you. This is like...
I don't know why you would want to do this. It's space junk, but there it is.
Yeah, they're down there for some other reason, and this is a cover. They did this on
Amazon Marketplace.
Well,
it's kind of cool.
He's ticking all the boxes of being an evil billionaire, right? He's got his space program of his own. He's got mysterious things under the sea.
Maybe he needs these for his launch vehicle.
Ah.
That's right. In the hollowed out volcano.
Ah. Mm-hmm.
Well, Musk could do a better job, and he doesn't...
Elon doesn't
cover it up.
Another cool guy. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, let's talk about the $500 million manhunt. The FBI is giving up. They're going to the internet to solve this case. It's a from our cold case files. Stay tuned.
What?
From our cold case files.
Huh.
This is a very ancient, long, what is it, like 30 years ago, this heist occurred. But first, a word from Stamps.com. You don't have to go to the post office anymore. No siree, Bob Hike. You can purchase and print your own postage on demand with your computer, your printer, and Stamps.com. Thank you, John C. Dvorak, for handing me the beautiful polished aluminum Stamps.com scale. I'm going to get you this scale absolutely free. This is not going to cost you a penny. All you need to do.
Your W.C. Fields now selling something
yes,
at the carnival?
Indeed. All you need to do is go to the website, stamps.com. It's a beautiful thing. Postage on demand. No, you don't need any postage reader. You don't need any special ink. You just need stamps.com. I got a deal, though. See that? You said it's an $80 Forget that, my boy. Click the microphone in the upper right-hand corner. Enter in the offer code TWIT. Watch what happens. It's a $110 bonus offer. Now, this is a pretty good of all the bonus offers from all our advertisers in all the world, she had to come into mine. This includes $55 of free postage.
Wow.
Now, okay, John, you can't use it all at once. You got to spread it out over the first few months of your Stamps.com subscription, but it's still free postage. You get the scale. You do pay shipping and handling. It's about $5 on that. You get a $5 supply kit. You also get a month of Stamps.com. Now, if you do mailing, if you do... Now, this isn't for your Christmas card list. If you do mailing, you do fulfillment... who does the fulfillment for No Agenda?
Eric DeShill.
Your son.
Yeah.
He does now. Is he
licking stamps and putting a... Stamps
he's
on
got
the,
some automated system.
He's probably got stamps.com. It's completely automated.
Yeah, it's
in fact, if it's a priority mail or express mail, it'll send an email with a tracking number out to the recipient, takes the address right from your address book or from your website for PayPal or Etsy or Amazon or, you know, and it fills that in. Any class of mail, it prints the labels, it print right on the envelopes. I mean, this is masterful. For mailing professionals, stamps.com, you got to try it free. Go to stamps.com. Again, click that microphone and use the offer code TWIT stamps.com. So it was an art heist, the Gardner Museum. I dimly remember this. 23 years ago, $500 million worth of paintings were stolen from the Gardner in Boston. The crooks in 1990 went in, tied up the security guards, got 13 paintings. Today, the feds say we know who they were. We know where the art was sent, but they've put together a website with this information and a $5 million reward. They're going to the internet. You know, you can't find somebody, best way to track them down? Don't use the FBI, use the WEB.
Crowdsourcing.
Here's the paintings. Here's the seeking information. I think this is kind of an interesting idea. I mean, it's been 23 years. They do know... They believe they know who did it.
Yeah, but how did they find that out?
That's a good question.
That was never explained in this story.
I don't know.
They're not saying.
A couple of nice pieces in here, by the way.
There's Rembrandts. There's Vermeers. I love this Vermeer.
And Vermeer is so rare.
Look at that. That's that gorgeous. Probably,
yeah.
They said $500 million these paintings are worth.
I'm stunned none have shown up on Antiques Roadshow.
My God, it's a Vermeer.
How did you even get one? I think there's only 10.
This Vermeer was on a table alongside the window with a chair in front. Because this was a mansion. The Gardner Museum was her mansion,
yeah,
where all her Rembrandts and Degas and Vermeers were. Anyway, it's kind of neat. Time for these paintings to come home. Mr. Gorbachev. No, that's somebody else. So,
did they locate? Generally speaking, when you have high-end thefts like this, they end up in private collections in Switzerland.
Right, that's the problem.
That's why they're not on Antiques.
That's exactly right.
Right.
Until later.
Many of these guys. I mean, there are people that actually order.
Right.
The pictures. I need this painting and that painting.
I'm guessing that I don't know anything about it, so it's really an uninformed guess, but that this was probably on spec. This theft.
Could be. Well, right. They stole so many, yeah.
You know,
it looks like there was some selectivity that went on.
Yeah.
Because they didn't just take
13
it.
Pieces. So they went, I mean, there's hundreds in this museum.
Right.
I bet you they took the catalog, they sent it around to some collectors. Said, well, what would you like? If we was to be able to get inside there, which one would you like and how much would you pay? And then they took orders.
Yeah.
And they broke in. The men were disguised as police officers. They tied up the security guards.
Nice and slick.
They stole exactly, 13 paintings. Rembrandt, Degas, Vermeer. They knew what they were taking. I think it's on spec.
By the way, that's not Mr. Gorbachev. It's Mr. Wizard.
Time for these two to come home. Dazzle, 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 drum. Very good. Time for these ones to come home. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I got the wrong mister.
Also, is the guy who's doing the art heist the same guy who's got the botnets? Is that the same voice?
Oh,
is
this maybe.
Just the one guy?
It's one guy.
He's got one voice.
It's one crook guy.
Well, he's got the Russian voice.
It's the crook
and he's got
guy
the
voice.
The crook Russian, yeah.
Crook guy voice.
Well, this is beyond the statute of limitations, so whether they come home or not is beside the point.
They want the paintings. I guess they can't prosecute these guys. Is that true?
Yeah, I think so.
Wow. So that was a pretty successful heist.
Yes. Half of, what was it again, $500
million? $500
million. Yeah, you know, we were talking.
That is.
What?
That's high end.
That's good stuff. Speaking of good stuff, Bill Gates has some money for you if you can come up with a new high-tech condom.
What, does it put itself on?
$100,000. Well, I...
$100,000? Is that what one's going to cost?
If you think about the condom, it's very important in certain areas of the world.
Oh.
It's one of the grand challenges in their global health program, up for grabs, so to speak, by anyone, students, scientists, entrepreneurs, who can improve the age-old technology of the condom. This is from the Gates Foundation. Additional concepts that might increase condom usage uptake include attributes that include ease of use for males and females.
That's so hard to use.
Better packaging or designs that are easier to properly apply.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Attributes that address and overcome cultural barriers are also desired. I think that
that's the key.
I think that is the key, actually. $100,000. He's also put money towards building a better toilet.
Did you see the new Kohler toilet? They've been advertising it. Or maybe I saw this on Australian TV.
Is this the one that unfolds?
No, no. It closes after you're done. It's got a sensor inside.
Yeah.
And if you once you leave the room, the toilet... The seat goes back down,
yeah.
And the top comes down, and it's got a bunch of levers.
I'll show you the video because it's a little odd.
It's a big square thing.
Because it's in the middle of the, it's the Numi toilet, right?
I don't know.
I think this is it. Yeah. It's in the middle of the living room in this video.
It's a very odd couple,
well,
by the way.
It's kind of
your turn to take a crap, honey.
It's kind of an object of art, and it's right in the picture window, too. Look at this. The view you get.
Yeah.
It's spectacular.
Yeah, or somebody gets.
So, yeah, this whole thing is, it's expensive, I think. It's thousands of dollars.
You need one in the thing back here, in the bathrooms.
Let me just take a look at some of the features before we spend the money on this. It's beautiful inside and out.
So I'm confused. Did Bill Gates pay $100,000 for one of these toilets?
No.
Or am I mixing up two stories?
No, that's the second story.
You've been hypnotized.
It's got a motion-activated lid and seat. So you walk in, it goes whoop. Advanced bidet functionality. Don't want to talk about that. But I guess, in other words,
popular.
There's a little hose that comes out of the back. Integrated air dryer.
Ooh. Oh, it's got one of those. So it's very Japanese-like.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of buttons you push, like the Japanese one, which, by the way, men out there, if you ever see a button that says RT, do not push it when you're on one of these toilets.
RT.
Yeah. Remove tampon.
Really? No. Is that a joke?
I'm sorry.
John, I'd like to give you this. You know, every time you come here.
That's going in the deposition right there.
Right there. Every time John comes here. I like to give him a little gift. This is something that we've been saving for you.
Yeah.
It is automatic open and close toilet
seat. Thank you, Leo.
We couldn't afford the Kohler
Numi,
but I think you'll like this. It's called iTouchless.
Yeah. Does it work with a clapper?
Do you need an iPod to make it work?
No.
Clap on?
No, but it's all yours.
Okay.
By the way, it doesn't include feet warming, which the Numi has.
This?
No, it doesn't have that. Illuminated panels or music. No. Look, it's got a remote control, but that's the Japanese toilets have remote controls, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I have high skepticism with anything motion activated related to a toilet because all the ones that are supposed to be a water saving device and flush for you, those don't work at all.
There's a bright light. That is examining room bright. What does that need?
What's wrong with the old fashioned toilet?
Nothing.
Or
what's wrong with the outhouse?
The outhouse stinks is for one thing.
This is deodorized.
And you can get splinters, which is the real drawback.
So we were talking about mail. Actually, I did not know this, but Mark Leno, who's a state senator from San Francisco, has introduced
a webcam built into the toilet. Some chat room.
You never know.
Chat room guy.
Privacy's dead. Get over it. Mark Leno has suggested a new California state law treating, and by the way, the EFF, Electronic Frontier Foundation, helped him draft it, that would treat electronic mail the same way as physical mail. That's part of the problem, is email is not treated the same.
Right. That's why they're trying to close the post office down so they can have access to everything we do.
Leno proposal requires state and local governments to get a warrant before asking email service providers like Google and Yahoo to hand over your email. The companies would then have to tell you that they did it.
Well, that would be a good idea.
Mm-hmm. So this is a direct response to what we were talking about earlier, where, you know, all they need is a subpoena.
Isn't this the same old story where they, you know, laws are written very specifically to protect certain parts of the world, and then technology advances, and they're like, yeah, let's not cover those because that would be inconvenient for us. I mean, of course email should be covered, like postal mail.
Get this. Last year, Leno tried to stop police from being able to read emails and text messages from your cell phone upon arrest. Hey, let's see what you got on here. Yeah. Jerry Brown, our governor, vetoed it.
Yeah.
Mm. Bill passed, he vetoed it. So I don't know if he'd veto this, but Governor Moonbeam, we used to call him.
That's right. Back in the old days.
Don't know what happened to him. Got
back when they were making that golden record.
No, I haven't. Have you met Governor Brown? Yeah. What's he like?
Zoned.
I mean, it's kind of amazing that this guy was governor of California before Reagan.
Right. Yeah, he was right before Reagan.
His father was a governor.
No, he was after Reagan.
Oh, is that right?
His father was governor.
Oh, right. It was Pat Brown.
Pat Brown, Jr.
Jerry like a Reagan
Brown
sandwich.
Came after Reagan, I guess.
It was a Reagan sandwich.
Yes.
And then years later, he's elected again after Schwarzenegger. I'm sorry, Denise?
Mayoring Oakland, I think, did him in.
Mayor of Oakland for a while. Lived at a firehouse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, when he was governor, he didn't live in the governor's mansion. I still think
too swank for him.
Yeah. Yeah. He's against it.
You know who else didn't live in the governor mansion?
Who?
Governor Schwarzenegger, because it was too dumpy for him.
Yeah, he lived in Hollywood.
Right.
Yeah.
So, actually, I'm very interested in what Denise has to say about the new patent law, which starts today. We will talk about that in just a moment. Actually, started a couple of days ago. But first, a word from Gazelle. If you've got an old product lying around... Is that clock right? Is it really 5:16? Have we been here for 4 hours?
We got to close the show.
Holy cow. What happened? I was having such fun.
Too much fun.
Is it really that late?
Yes. Yeah, it is.
Yes. I am so sorry. Let me just do the Gazelle ad, then you can all go home.
Okay.
Have a macaroon. Pass these around, please. Sure. I apologize. I was having fun. Gazelle.com, you know there's new phones coming, the Galaxy S4, the HTC One. I just ordered an HTC One, but nobody knows when it'll be out. But the good thing to do is, yeah, pass those around. Thank you, Jason. The good thing to do would be to go to Gazelle.com where you have 30 days to pull the trigger, in effect, on your quote. So go there, get a quote now for your existing phone, because I'll tell you what, it's not going to get more valuable tomorrow or the day after or the day after. So let's say I have, as I do, an iPhone 5 on AT&T. I'm thinking I want to replace that with the HTC One. Let me get an offer. It's in $380. Wow. That pays for the new phone. Now, here's the beauty part. I can lock that in for 30 days. I have locked it in at gazelle.com. That price is good for the next 30 days. I can wait and see what happens. I have time to transfer my data over. They will wipe the data for you, by the way. And might as well, as long as you're going through your stuff, get more stuff. Throw it in that box. They send you a postage paid box for your stuff. And then they send you cash when they get it. It is a really great deal. How much is that Galaxy S2? That can't be worth very much. Free of water damage. Let's see. $115. That's awesome. Too bad I gave it to Baratunde. Now I regret it. I should have checked on Gazelle first. GAZELLE.com. Sell your iPhone for cash, your BlackBerry, your Galaxy. Sell your iPad. You want to get there? The rumors are strong. New iPad coming soon. New iPhone 5, too, apparently. Now's the time to get that quote, even on Apple computers and other Apple products. GAZELLE. You'll find out why Gazelle has sent out over $50 million to over 500,000 customers over the last couple of years. A great way to sell your gadgets. Gazelle.com. Thank you for their support of This Week in Tech. Real quickly, that first-to-file patent law starts today. Really big, or it started on the 18th, I guess. Really big shift in patent law. I didn't realize it was already already in law. The idea is you don't have to worry about who has notes from previous years or whatever. It's just whoever got to the patent office first.
First to the window.
First to the window. It took effect March 18th. Denise, is this, you're an IP lawyer. Is this a good thing for inventors? Is it a good thing for our broken patent system, or does it have anything to do with our broken patent system?
It does a bit. It will streamline things for the patent system. It was part of the America Invents Act enacted in 2011. And it brings us into conformity with how the rest of the world does things. So it's a good thing in that sense. It makes things more streamlined. It doesn't necessarily help inventors because, you have to be really on it to make sure you get right down there to the window. Some people have been calling it the patent cliff, much like the fiscal cliff. I don't know that it's quite that dramatic.
I had heard that many, many, many people were filing patent applications leading up to the 18th, trying to get it in before then.
Right. Hence the patent cliff right designation. But, I think that once people realize this is the way it's going to operate, it's going to be not as big a deal as a lot of the coverage has made it out to be.
It doesn't really affect this patent troll problem, though, does it?
No, does not.
Nothing. You know, we got to get rid of software patents, really. That's the way to get rid of the patent troll problem, right?
No.
What?
Not the patent troll problem is a problem. It's a problem.
It's not a problem. It's
not
a solution.
It's not a software patent troll problem.
Well, but it's more of a problem if you don't make something, right? I don't know. Denise, is it a software patent issue or is it just a general issue? I guess it is.
It's a software patent issue in that
it's really easy to get a software patent.
Exactly. Yeah. Things are being patented that traditionally you would not think would be able to be covered under that system.
Well, Denise, I think worse than that is these business model patents. Well, you patent a process,
right?
That's how you run your company, and you do this and that.
You told me to do that. You said I did, you want to make money someday selling Twit, make a lot of processes and patent them.
Yeah, I did say that.
I didn't do any of that.
Of course not.
Because I don't want to make money.
Well, that's
right.
Not true.
Amazon's one click being the, right, the classic example.
Right.
One of the early examples, but there's a lot of dumb examples.
But wouldn't that kind of come under the software patent? It's another patent. It isn't a physical thing.
Right.
It's a process.
Yes, it's
you okay?
It's not an invention.
Going to make it?
Getting less, getting further away from I have invented this thing
right
to I have invented this process.
This idea.
Yeah. And, there are other areas of IP law that have traditionally covered that, and the courts are very much up in arms about software patents and what is going to be permitted to survive and what is not. So there's no real definitive answer there. Patent trolling, I think, is, as John said, more a function of the fact that people are able to buy up portfolios of
right
patents and then enforce them.
Right. Well, there has been talk about adding a shield law to any consumer product, extending the shield law. This is the law that says you can, before a patent or some sort of lawsuit is filed, you'd have to put in escrow the amount of money for the legal fees in case it turns out that it wasn't a good suit, something like that, right? Is that going to make a difference?
I think that makes a huge difference in the way that what cases get filed and whether or not they proceed through the system. When you have the anvil hanging over your head of somebody else's legal fees, it's a very big motivator. So I think...
Good.
Good. Good thing.
And that one is not yet law, but it's been proposed and perhaps will happen.
Yes, that one's
okay
wending its way.
Everybody go home.
Legislative process.
Everybody go home. I'm done. Thank you to our iPad winner. Before you leave, would you sign the iPad?
Absolutely.
Okay, you too, Jason. I'll
you
get
got
it,
it
for you. Would you sign the touchless toilet
it's
seat?
It's expected that you sign it too, you know.
I don't know.
Yeah.
We've got to ask. All right, here we go.
You're the only guy with a valuable signature.
We want to thank you all for joining us. We do Twit every Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time, right after This Week in YouTube. Have I mentioned our new show with Lamar Wilson, This Week in YouTube?
They're talking about it.
Yeah. The buzz is phenomenal. If you don't get to see it live, which we like it if you do, because I love getting the feedback from the chat room. Oh, This Week in Tech winner from your friends at GoToMeeting.
Oh, you had this engraved.
We had it engraved, yeah.
Huh.
If you...
Where's the... And we have a Sharpie?
We'll get a Sharpie. I think, yes, here comes Jeff with the Sharpie. Ladies and gentlemen, Jeff the intern. Yeah, Thank you. He is. We only see
can
his
I
hand.
Can I sign this too? Sharpie. That'd be kind of cool.
You could sign that too.
No.
Sure. You can get on-demand versions too if you can't be here live, and we've got audio and video available at twit.tv, also wherever better podcasts are aggregated. Thank you all for joining us. Denise Howell is the host of This Week in Law, which you can see every... Is it Friday or Monday? It's Friday,
it's
right?
It's Fridays yeah. at 11 PT, 1800 UTC.
Ooh, I like how she does that. Instant math.
Yes.
And a great show to watch. If you're interested in what we were talking about towards the end here, the idea of... should I sign it too?
Yes.
Before you do?
Yeah.
You're going to do something interesting?
I don't know.
He's going to deface my signature. I know he is.
No, I'm not.
Everybody should watch Denise Howell. Evan, what's his name? And this
Evan
week,
Brown.
Evan Brown.
Jeez, the guy's losing control.
Hey,
of his
I remembered
own
his first name.
What's in those macaroons?
And This Week in Law, science. Thank you so much for being here, Denise. We really appreciate it. Good
Thank
to have you
guys.
You.
It's been
love,
a great
love
pleasure.
Denise Howell. Thank you, John C. Dvorak, for being here. We appreciate that. ChannelDvorak.com, NoAgendaShow.com.
Exactly.
Get your CDs at the Korean Market in San Jose.
Your CDs are free.
If you can't listen live, get the CDs.
Our next gimmick is we're going to hand out bags, those nice plastic bags for shoppers who have to now pay for bags in the grocery stores.
You
in
do,
Alameda
in
County.
San Jose.
Now we're going to be giving No Agenda bags to everybody.
I was shocked. So you should give out bags. Yeah. Stand out front.
Yeah.
Would you like a bag?
Exactly. Awesome. Stand out front with the bags.
That's awesome.
Just the opposite of what a poor homeless guy does. We'll give
they
him
take
a bag,
bags.
Too. Well, they could.
You're handing him out. Wait a minute. Let me just, I want to write the guy's name.
Oh, you put a little logo on there. That's cute.
I do. I do a little Twit logo. Sometimes people don't know what that thing is, but it's something.
Looks like a rocket.
Rocket ship to like Mars. His name is Dave, so I'm going to say congrats.
Or a box
Dave.
Jellyfish.
Congrats,
the dangerous
what's his
ones.
Name?
What's? Well, sometimes I just write to eBay buyer. You know, that just nice. That short circuits the whole process. But let me let John deface my signature.
I'm not going to do anything
there
like
you
that.
You can do anything you want, John. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.
This
another twit
amazing.
Is in the can.
Yay!